Star Wars, Dark Saber, by Kevin J. Anderson. The Banthas plodded in single file, leaving only a narrow trail of scuffed footprints winding across the dunes. Twin suns hammered down upon the procession. Waves of heat rippled like cloaking shields, blurring the distance and making the oven of the dune sea seem an indistinct illusion. The Banthas moved silently, except for the rustle of their shaggy fur. Swathed in strips of cloth, the Tusken raiders astride the shaggy beasts looked from side to side, keeping watch. Wrapped entirely in bandages, Han Solo looked out through narrow metal tubes designed to shield the eyes from blowing desert grit. His mouth was covered with a corroded metal breath mask that filtered sand and contained a small internal moisturizer to make Tatooine's fiery air more breathable. He rode his Bantha, hoping to remain unnoticed in the middle of the procession. Han took another sip of his precious water. He couldn't complain. This had, after all, been his own crazy suggestion. He just hadn't expected Luke Skywalker would be so eager to agree. The mission was vital to the New Republic, and Han had to follow through. The procession trudged through the sand, winding up the crest of a shifting dune that stood like a towering sentinel in the arid ocean. Finally, Han could remain silent no longer. He whispered into the short-range transmitter implanted in his breath mask, "Luke, what's going on? They're up to something." Luke Skywalker seemed far more comfortable in his disguise than Han felt. He had grown up on Tatooine, of course, but his voice now sounded bone-weary as it came over the pickup in Han's ear.
"A few of the Sand People have vague suspicions, but they haven't centered on us yet. With the Force, I'm managing to distract anyone who pays too much attention to you or me. Wait until they're preoccupied, and I'll explain more."
The lead rider reached the peak of the Sand Mountain. The other Banthas plodded up, surrounding their leader, who raised his cloth-wrapped arm, brandishing a wicked-looking gaffy stick. Behind the leader sat a single passenger, slumped and sullen. Was he being bestowed some kind of honor, Han wondered, or was he being exiled from the tribe? The passenger let himself drop from the shaggy beast, and the other Sand People climbed down from their Banthas.
"All right, they're distracted, I can explain. The lone Tusken raider lost his Bantha 3 days ago. A crate dragon killed it, and unfortunately our friend there got away."
"What do you mean, unfortunately?" Han mumbled.
"The Sand People have a very close relationship with their Banthas. It's a mental bonding, almost like a marriage. When one member of the pair is killed, the other feels like an amputee."
Unconsciously, Luke flexed his cyborg hand.
"Many of these Tusken raiders believe our friend should have died beside his Bantha, no matter what the circumstances."
"So, are they just gonna kill him?"
"Yes and no. They believe the spirit of the dead Bantha must decide. There are wild Banthas in the desert. If the spirit wishes for him to bond with another mount, our friend will find a free wild Bantha in the desert, join with it, and return in triumph to the tribe. However, if the Bantha's spirit wants his rider to join him in death, then the outcast will wander hopelessly in the desert until he dies."
The Sand People waited for the exile to make the first move. Finally, with a cry of triumph or challenge, he plunged down the steep and shifting slope of the dune. The Sand People tilted their heads toward the burning sky and let out a loud, ululating cry that made Han shudder. That night, the group camped in a thick maze of rocky badlands, punctuated by pockmarked stone needles rising out of the windblown sand. Darkness fell quickly with the double sunset, and the temperature plummeted. The rocks continued to throb with stored heat, but they quickly cooled.
"I'm gonna get some rest," Han said.
"Can't you wait until they all go to sleep and then catch a nap yourself?"
Luke shook his head.
"I don't dare. If I stop monitoring their thoughts, they might suddenly realize we're not supposed to be with them. Besides, a Jedi can go a long time without rest.
Whatever you say, buddy.
We should reach Jabba's palace by tomorrow, Luke said with weary hope.
I can't wait. I mean, I had so much fun the last time I was there.
The sand people roused themselves in the frigid darkness. Luke moved more sluggishly than ever. Han was worried about his friend. Luke was exhausted, but also suffering from frustration and depression because of his inability to help Callista, the Jedi woman he loved, regain her lost powers. And now, after days without sleep, hiding in the midst of ferocious desert nomads, Luke's stamina was wearing thin. By mid-morning, with both suns climbing the crystal blue sky, the Tusken Raiders topped a rocky rise and looked across the painted desert to the ruins of Jabba the Hutt's palace.
When I split off, follow me, Luke said. I'm going to distract them so they won't notice us separating from them.
Far across the rolling ocean of sand, the wind was creating a sand whirl. Han suspected it was a natural occurrence, but Luke used it to his advantage. He nudged his bantha to the right, splitting off from the line of Tusken Raiders. Han yanked on the rough, curved horn of his mount, urging it away from the others. None of the Tusken Raiders turned in their direction. A harsh wind whistled through the canyon, moaning among the open minarets of Jabba's palace. Han peeled the bandages off and removed the metal eye coverings, tossing them to the ground. He drew a deep breath of the dusty air and coughed, but he grinned at his companion.
Boy, I'm glad to get rid of those.
Luke carefully unwrapped himself, stuffing the rags inside his tattered desert robes. Han shook his head as he looked at the ruins. Jabba had not been the first inhabitant of the huge palace. It had been built centuries before the Hutt crime lord was born, or hatched, or whatever happened to baby huts. Long ago, exiled monks of the Bomar Order had found an isolated spot on the backwater world Tatooine and had built a towering monastery, remaining aloof from the planet's other inhabitants. Sometime later, the bandit Al-Kara had broken into the monastery and used parts of it as his hideout as he preyed upon moisture farmers. The monks ignored him utterly. Since that time, a succession of undesirables had located their headquarters in portions of the monastery, the latest of whom had been Jabba the Hutt. But after Jabba's death at the Great Pit of Carkoon, a civil war had occurred among his minions as each scrambled to steal the Hutt crime lord's possessions, ransacking the palace. Through some of his underworld connections, Han had received disturbing rumors that other Hutts had recently been poking around in the abandoned palace looking for something. Han needed to find out what it was. The corroded durasteel door loomed in front of them. Over the years, the control circuits had crossed or decayed, and the heavy barrier had risen partway up. Drifts of sand had collected in the gap. As soon as Luke touched a button on the lichen-covered external panel, another panel creaked open in the center of the door, and a bobbing artificial eye extended, swaying on a rusted metal stalk. Jabba's surveillance system. The machine's words were garbled and slurred, as if its programming had become defective. Han reached into the folds of his robe, pulled out his blaster pistol, and blew the thing into smoking shards and sparking wires. He turned to Luke with a roguish grin.
I've always wanted to do that. That thing was always obnoxious.
A blaster bolt shot from behind them, spanged against the metal door. Han whirled.
What?
Luke and Han's bantha snorted in greeting. Another blaster bolt shot down from behind them to burn a smoking hole through Han's robe, barely missing his chest. The sand people thundered down the canyon, whipping their banthas to a frenzy and waving gaffy sticks. Ducking under the door, Han said,
I think you stopped distracting them too soon, kid.
Inside, Luke found the inner control panel and grabbed at a bunch of rusted wires. There was a single hopeless spark, then the entire panel went dead. Han crouched down with his blaster pistol.
Better do something quick, Luke.
One of the sand people fired under the door. The energy bolt ricocheted on the flagstone floor. Han fired his own blaster at the bandaged feet he could see, and the feet leapt backward. Luke gave up on the control panel and stood with his fists clenched at his sides. He concentrated. The tracks groaned as he moved the mechanisms holding the door in place. Suddenly, it crashed down, belching up clouds of dust. Han heaved a long sigh.
Well, that was fun. I don't suppose you remember to bring along a portable glow lamp.
Luke reached into the folds of his robe and removed his lightsaber.
Always come prepared.
The vibrant green blade made Han shield his eyes. Inside the abandoned main chamber where the bloated hut had pronounced fate on his helpless victim, scavengers made noises. Pebbles trickled from a loose block in the wall.
The Bomar monks are still here, Luke said. But they don't seem to have been anxious to reclaim the rooms Jabba used. From what I heard, when the monks reach their greatest state of enlightenment, they undergo some kind of surgery that removes their brain and places it in a life support jar. It's their highest achievement, keeps them from being distracted by physical diversions, leaving them to ponder the great mysteries.
Han snorted.
Good thing Jedi don't go for nonsense like that.
The two whirled. Approaching them were the whirring servo motors and articulated mechanical legs of an automated steel spider. Slung under the legs where the body of the spider would have been hung a jar filled with clear fluid that bubbled and gurgled, pulsing life support into a human brain.
Uh-oh,
Han said.
It's one of the monks.
No. Are you friends of Jabba's?
The creature's voice was processed through a tiny speaker mounted on its legs.
Not exactly,
Han said.
Who are you?
The spider leg skittered from side to side as if its brain had lost control.
I am Mazor. I was once a rival of Jabba's. We had a confrontation, and I lost. Jabba took me as a prisoner to the Bomar monks and ordered them to perform their surgery on me. Jabba kept me around his palace as a joke, but now Jabba is dead, and I am the last one laughing.
Han and Luke looked at each other. Han lowered his blaster.
We're enemies of Jabba, too. In fact, we were there at the Great Pit of Carcoon when he was killed.
Then I am greatly in your debt.
In that case, perhaps you can help us. We heard rumors. If you have been here in the palace, you might have seen what we need to know.
Yes, many strangers have come here recently. Many intruders searching.
What were they looking for?
Han asked.
Information. Jabba's information. He had many Imperial secrets.
Imperial secrets? Luke said, but the Empire has fallen. What could the Hutts possibly want with Imperial information?
Imperial information. Imperial Information Center, the great computer base on Coruscant. Jabba had obtained secret passwords. He knew how to access the Emperor's most heavily protected information.
Han was startled.
You mean the Hutts can break into our computer center?
Jabba had ways of accessing them.
Tell me, did the Hutts find what they were looking for?
Yes. They can now get what they wish. They intend to create their own bargaining force, an invincible weapon. The Hutt crime syndicate will be more powerful than the rebels or what's left of the Empire.
Luke bent closer to the brain in the jar.
Do you know any details of their plans, any specifics?
No. Beware of everything the Hutts do. They have the key they sought. And now they will move on to their next step.
Han nodded grimly, looking at Luke.
We have to get back to Coruscant and report to Leia. The New Republic needs to be on guard.
Luke switched off his lightsaber, plunging the room into shadow, but he reached forward to rub his fingers on the edges of Mazor's brain jar.
Is there anything we can do for you? I might be able to help you find peace in your existence.
No, Jedi Knight. The Bomar monks have already given as much solace as they could in that respect. What you must do for me is stop the Hutt's plan. Humiliate them, and I will remain here alone.
The spider legs rocked back and forth.
I will continue to laugh at Jabba. That is my reward.
Since their banthas had run off, leaving them stranded at Jabba's palace, Han suggested to Luke that they investigate the vehicle hangars in the lower levels. Han and Luke worked together, swapping components, making modifications from what they had on hand. At last they operated a clanking mechanical side door, letting the wash of yellow sunlight scour the filthy hangar bay. They climbed aboard two battered swoops that reminded Luke of the speeder bikes he and his sister Leia had ridden so recklessly through the forests on Endor. Luke sat on the dented metal seat, trying to be comfortable on the scraps of the petrified leather covering. It's been a long time since I did something like this, Luke said. Feels good.
Just like old times, kid.
Han powered up the humming repulsor lifts.
Let's head back to Mos Eisley spaceport so we can get out of here.
Wait, Han. Luke had a pensive expression. There's something I have to do first. We'll need to make a side trip. Circle around to the Jundland wastes.
Han looked at him, pursing his lips. Then he nodded. Yeah, I thought you had something else on your mind from the way you were acting. Anything to do with Callista?
Luke nodded, but gave no details.
I guess I should know by now that when I'm with the Jedi, nothing's simple and straightforward.
As events continued around him, Luke forced himself to keep moving. The news of the Hutt's secret plan alarmed him, but his heart ached at being separated from Callista. He longed to be with her. He longed to help her. Following threads of the Force, he and Callista had connected with each other's personalities from the very first. They had linked, like two pieces of a precise puzzle. Being Jedi, they knew it in a way that few other lovers could understand. Though Callista had been born decades before Luke, her spirit had been frozen within the computer of the automated dreadnought, the Eye of Palpatine, after she had given her life in an attempt to destroy the Imperial ship. Luke had fallen in love with Callista's luminous form until she came back to life in the body of a woman named Kray, who had been one of his most brilliant students. Kray had sacrificed herself to destroy the dreadnought, and in a devastating irony, Callista had lost all her Jedi abilities in the transformation. Callista was alive again, but not the same, not completely there. They could no longer link with each other, mind and essence. They'd had only those heady days to remember, trapped together aboard the Eye of Palpatine. But their memories were enough to galvanize the deep love between them and make them keep trying to find an answer. Luke would never give up until he found a way to bring Callista back whole. Luke stood anxious and alone, feeling like a prodigal son outside the ramshackle collapsed hut that had once been the home of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Han waited by his repaired swoop, drinking the last of their water. Luke swallowed and stepped forward, his footsteps crunching in the silence. He had not been here in many years. The door had fallen off its hinges. Part of the clay front wall had fallen in. Gingerly, he ducked low and stepped into the home of his first mentor. Lights slanted in from cracks in the walls. Dust motes drifted like gold dust through the sunbeams. The place smelled of mold, empty shadows, and ghosts. Luke stood in the middle of the room, breathing deeply, turning around, trying to sense the presence he desperately needed to see. This was the place where Obi-Wan Kenobi had told Luke of the Force. Obi-Wan and Yoda had begun to prepare him, but had left Luke with so many questions, so much knowledge unlearned. And the insane Joris Sabaoth had been able to tell him only perversions of what a true Jedi needed to know. The Emperor had shown Luke dark side ways, but Luke needed to understand so much more. He needed to know how to save Callista.
Ben.
He closed his eyes, calling out with his mind as well as his voice. He tried to penetrate the invisible walls of the Force and reach Obi-Wan Kenobi, who had visited him numerous times before saying he could never speak with Luke again.
Ben, I need you,
Luke said. Luke paused and listened and sensed, but felt nothing. If he could not summon Obi-Wan's spirit here in his old dwelling, Luke doubted he could find his former teacher ever again. Luke swallowed his despair, vowing never to give up his quest to help Callista. Perhaps that was the message. Obi-Wan's silence proved to him that he could not rely on his old teachers to help him. Luke would have to solve his own problems. When he stepped back outside, the blazing sunlight washed over him like a cleansing flood. He took a deep breath and went to meet Han. Han Solo stood in the shade beside his floating swoop and wiped sweat from his forehead. Well, kid, find what you were looking for?
No. And yes.
Han shook his head.
Leave it to a Jedi, never to give you a straight answer.
In this case, there is no straight answer, Han.
I'm done with Tatooine. We can go back to Mos Eisley now. We have to warn the New Republic what the Hutts are up to.
storm of rocks swept across space, smashing everything in its path. The Hoth asteroid belt was a nightmarish navigation hazard. A few small rocks collided against the Orko Sky Mine ship's forward deflector shields, then vanished into bright plumes of vaporized dust. On the foredeck, Durga the Hutt rested on his levitating platform like a slab of raw flesh, watching out the command viewports of his expeditionary ship. Durga saw only one thing as he watched the colliding asteroids. Resources. Vast, untapped resources containing every sort of metal and mineral that could be of use in the Hutt's secret new project.
"Increase deflector shields,"
Durga said, puffing his cheeks and stretching the smeared birthmark on the left side of his head. His minions scrambled to do his bidding. Weequays, Gamorreans, human slaves, and others clustered about the expeditionary ship's controls, bickering about how best to implement the order. Beside the slug-like Hutt, Imperial General Sulimar turned from a status screen and snapped to attention. His chest was plastered with medals from previous campaigns in which he'd been victorious, and which he never ceased blabbering about. He smiled grimly.
"Mining Remote Alpha has already begun its hunting and processing routine. Mining Remote Beta has just been unleashed."
As they approached, the mammoth ore processing unit began to stand out.
"A magnificent machine," Durga thought.
The giant cargo container had a front end of moving mechanical mouthparts and turbolaser turrets for blasting asteroids to rubble. Durga watched as it stuffed debris into the processing maw, chewed it up, spat out the useless slag, and sorted the precious metals. The newly designed automated mining remotes directed the mechanical behemoths to hunt down the purest concentrations of metal in the asteroid belt and to dismantle the rocks and exploit the treasure.
"They seem to be functioning perfectly," Sulimar said.
Durga let loose a deep belly laugh.
"Naturally. My pet scientist, Bevel Lemelisk, designed them. Perhaps you've heard of his other work. Lemelisk was in charge of construction of both the first and the second Death Stars."
Sulimar's eyebrows shot up, showing how impressed he was.
"Bevel Lemelisk will soon be hard at work overseeing the construction of our new weapon."
"Beta is picking up a very high concentration of metal," one of the horned Deveronian diagnosticians said. "It's amazingly pure."
The mining remote altered course and increased speed toward its new target. Durga watched with growing glee.
"There must be even more resources out here than we expected," another tech said. "Mining remote Alpha has found a rich source as well. It's headed this way."
General Sulimar frowned.
"Do you think they could have picked up the same target?"
The Deveronian raised his clawed hands in panic.
"Alpha and Beta haven't picked up the same target. They've detected each other."
"Well, shut them down,"
Durga said.
"An unforeseen programming glitch."
The Deveronian hammered instructions into his control panels.
"I can't, sir. I don't have the override code."
Durga bellowed.
"Well, who does?"
"Only Bevel Lemelisk, sir."
"Get him up here,"
Durga shouted.
"But he asked not to be disturbed, sir,"
the Deveronian said. Durga gurgled in rage at the comment and punched a control button on his repulsor sled. Suddenly, the Deveronian technician's chair erupted with electrical fire. The alien's skin blackened and burned, and in seconds, the Deveronian was a steaming skeletal corpse.
"Now, would someone else like to get Bevel Lemelisk for me?"
Durga boomed.
"Before it's too late."
One of the human technicians leapt off his chair and ran to the turbo lift. Despite his outburst, Durga knew they could never rouse the weapons engineer fast enough to do any good. With outrage and horror, he watched as the two gargantuan machines came together. The giant machines were mindlessly murderous, blasting each other's hull plates, ripping metal arms, and stuffing them into processing maws. Durga felt fury boiling inside him, and he hammered his fists on the control panels. He looked around at his technicians, seeking someone worthless to blame. But all of them were standing at attention beside their panels, safely away from their chairs. Bevel Lemelisk scowled as he trudged along the corridors of the Orko Sky Mine ship, huffing with the effort and with annoyance at Durga's constant demands. Seeing the weapons engineer, Durga issued a roar that sounded like a cross between a belch and a boiler explosion. Lemelisk blinked his pale eyes, and his attention flickered to the bridge windows.
Uh-oh. Durga eased his repulsor sled closer to Lemelisk.
I am most displeased with your performance, Lemelisk.
The Emperor had said exactly those words just before he had executed Bevel Lemelisk for the first time. Shortly after the Death Star was expected to crush the rebel base on Yavin 4, Bevel Lemelisk had been summoned to meet with Emperor Palpatine deep within the Imperial Palace.
My Emperor, I trust you have received word by now that our Death Star has been destroyed at the secret rebel base, Lemelisk said.
I have received word, Palpatine said.
With that, a flexible wire cage dropped from the ceiling and fell squarely over the weapons engineer. Tiny openings appeared in the polished stone floor, leading down to a black unknown. He heard the scrabbling of sharp feet.
I am most displeased with your performance, Lemelisk, the Emperor said.
The eight-legged, hard-shelled insect shone a deep blue as it clambered into the light and paused to probe the air with waving antennae. From other openings, identical beetles emerged. They swooped toward him, sinking mandibles with serrated razor edges into the thick flesh of his palm.
These are piranha beetles, the Emperor said. And now, I'm going to watch them devour you, bit by bit.
Later, Lemelisk had awakened, completely disoriented. Inside the cage, he saw a carcass that had been stripped down to gnawed bones and shreds of clothing, the clothing he himself had worn only moments ago.
You'll grow accustomed to your clone in a moment, the Emperor said. It is an uncertain skill at best, and the Jedi I stole the technique from was reluctant to give me thorough instructions, but it seems to work.
Since then, Lemelisk had died several times. Now as he faced Durga the Hutt and Imperial General Sulamar, he sought some reservoir of strength within himself. He bowed to Durga. We can recover from this. I promise to rectify the problem, Lord Durga. But while I'm doing that, you must focus on our main goal. The primary item on our agenda must be to get those plans from the Imperial Information Center. In the plush chambers of the New Republic's Chief of State, Leia Organa Solo hurried to make herself presentable. Beside her, Han Solo fiddled with his shirt fasteners and cursed the tiny glittering insignia he was trying to pin on his diplomatic finery.
I hate this, Leia. I love you enough to do this, but I don't enjoy getting dressed up even to meet people I like. And I don't exactly count those overgrown mudworms among the people I like.
Leia placed her hand on his shoulder. Do you think I like it any more than you do? But Durga is making some new kind of overture, she said. It's a diplomatic necessity that we receive the fat slug and hear what he has to say. As Durga's entourage passed into the reception room, Leia saw that the Hutt crime lord knew the value of spectacle. Durga reclined on a broad pallet that drifted above the floor on a cushion of repulsor lifts. But he moved forward through the plodding efforts of a team of Gamorrean slaves lashed to the floating platform by red velvet bonds. If anything, Durga was even fatter than Jabba. His childlike hands seemed out of place on his swollen body. Dozens of Toril, semi-intelligent hairy creatures that Durga kept as workers and pets, swarmed him and his retainers like large simian lice. The creatures were each about the size of Leia's forearm, with grayish-brown fur and four arms that ended in dexterous fingers. As he was a protocol droid, 3PO was the first to speak.
The New Republic gives a greeting to mighty Durga.
I am most interested in your mission to Coruscant, Leia said. What brings a Hutt crime lord to the legitimate government of the New Republic?
Durga spread his arms wide.
Madam President, your words wound me. We are all trying to do what is best for ourselves. The Hutts do not want war. And I don't believe your fledgling government can afford a drawn-out struggle either. Unlike the Empire, we Huts have an invisible web of influence in places you cannot imagine.
He blinked his heavy-lidded eyes.
However, I do not come here to make threats, but an overture of peace. I propose that the Huts form an alliance with the New Republic, become commercial partners.
Leia tried to keep the skepticism from her voice. Is that the only reason?
It is our greatest wish to become respectable businessmen rather than powerful outlaws.
I see.
I wish to continue these negotiations at some time in the future. Allow me to extend an invitation for you to make a visit to Nal Hatta at your convenience.
Leia nodded, noncommittal. I'll consider it, Durga. She smiled diplomatically, vowing to herself that all the stars in the galaxy would burn to cold ash before she ever entered into an alliance with the Huts. Callista sat alone in the jungles of Yavin 4 as night gathered. Near the horizon, lambent glow from the setting gas giant streaked the sky with color. Masasi trees rose tall against the deepening purple. She had not gone far from the great temple where Luke Skywalker had founded his Jedi Academy. The pyramid had endured for thousands of years and stood now like a jagged black cutout in the dusk. Callista sat in a clearing, cross-legged in front of a campfire she had built from dry brush, concentrating, allowing no distractions. The warmth of the fire spread out in waves, driving back the damp coolness that settled over the jungle lowlands. She stared into the flames and pushed. But she felt nothing, not a flicker of her former abilities. She sensed no communion with the fire. Luke's other Jedi trainees could make the flames dance, pulling them out like rubber sheets to make faces, images, twisting them into braids. It was a simple Jedi exercise. Callista had learned how to do it many years ago. But now, try as she might, the flames would not respond. Her Jedi powers had abandoned her. As Callista readied herself for bed, she answered a summons at her door, surprised to find the Jedi woman Tian standing in the corridor, looking anxious.
I found something in the records.
Tian had a narrow face, pointed chin, high cheekbones, and large eyes framed by long silvery hair.
It isn't much, but I thought you'd like to know.
Come in, Callista said. What is it? Tian raised her pale eyebrows.
You might like to know that at least you aren't alone. Not in history, at any rate.
Callista perked up. Other Jedi have lost their powers before?
Yes. There was another.
Tian sat down on the rumpled covers of Callista's sleeping pallet.
Ulic Keldroma, a great warlord who fought in the Sith War on the side of evil with Exar Kun. He betrayed Kun and led the Jedi Knights here, where they trapped Kun's spirit in the temples and laid waste to the entire moon. But by turning to the dark side, Ulic Keldroma damned himself forever. And in a final confrontation, he was stripped of his Force ability.
But how? Callista said.
The Force is in all things. How can one Jedi Knight strip another of the ability to use it? Ulic was not deprived of anything. In a manner of speaking, he was blindfolded to the Force. Ulic no longer had access to it.
But how could I have had such blinders placed upon me? Callista said. Was it just a consequence of my spirit entering another body?
Kray's body,
Tian said, with a slight tightening in her throat. Callista remembered that the silver-haired Jedi woman had known Kray well, had trained with her, and now Callista's spirit inhabited the same body.
I can't explain it, Tian said with a shrug. I can only tell you what I've learned. Every piece of information adds more to the solution. Someday we'll find the answer.
Callista nodded and stood to usher Tian out the door. The great temple had fallen silent with late evening.
The other Jedi trainees either sleeping or meditating in their own chambers. Out in the corridor, R2-D2 puttered along the flagstones, looking lost without Luke Skywalker. Callista vowed to keep trying, keep searching. There had to be some way. She had waited for so long inside the computer, and now that she had found her love in Luke, she would not let him go without a fight. But she could not be a part of him, true Jedi to true Jedi, until she regained her ability to use the Force. She couldn't give everything to him until then. Their time had been so brief before they had been snatched apart, left with only their loss, to look into each other's eyes with an invisible barrier between them that neither could breach. Callista swallowed, but her throat remained dry. Despite her reservations, she could not wait until Luke Skywalker returned to her. When Luke did return several days later, Callista knew instantly that he had been unsuccessful. She was unable to read him the way she once had, but she could tell by his demeanor that he had not found the answers he sought. She met Luke on the landing grid in front of the pyramid. The other Jedi students emerged one by one to welcome their master home. Callista ran to him. Luke moved quickly, delighted to see her. He caught her in his arms, holding her close, but said nothing. She kissed him, then said quietly, "General Kenobi did not answer your summons." He looked at her strangely, blinking his cool blue eyes, then smiled. "I keep forgetting you were a Jedi so long ago that you knew Obi-Wan when he was a young military commander." He averted his gaze. "No, he didn't answer. But that doesn't mean anything. I'm going to keep trying. And so are you." "You can bet on that," she agreed. "Let's go greet the others." Callista slipped her arm around his waist. He held her, and the two walked toward the temple. "I'm sorry you didn't find the answer," she said. "But just having you back makes me happy." "That much I can give you," Luke said. "But I hope we can have more. So much more."
"We will,"
Callista said. A heavy, warm rain sheared through the jungle, pattering on the glossy leaves. Luke ignored it or accepted it as he led his students along the wet pathways through the undergrowth surrounding the great temple. Silgal, the Calamarian Jedi Knight, walked directly behind Master Skywalker. Her salmon-colored skin glistened, and she blinked her large eyes contentedly in the rain. Kip Duran walked beside the cloned alien Dorskitty One, whose smooth skin and rounded features made him appear streamlined. Dorskitty One had pale olive-green skin, wide yellow eyes, and an open, innocent face. Kip and Dorskitty One had become close companions in the past year. Across the river, and through the rain, Kip could see the ruins of one of the Masasi temples, the tall, crumbling Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster. Luke stopped at the bank and spread his hands at his sides as if drawing up lines of force from beneath the surface. "I'm pleased to be marking a passage. The river flows, as does the Force, never ending, always moving, as we must be. I brought you to Yavin 4 to begin your instruction. All I can do is point you on the path of the light side and open your minds to the possibilities of the Force. You must complete your own training. 3 of my trainees have decided to depart from the Jedi Praxium, the academy where we learn action and learn the Force." Kip, Dorskitty One, and Silgal stepped forward and turned to face the other Jedi trainees. "They have completed everything I know how to teach them. They have built their own lightsabers." As one, the 3 graduates flicked on the weapons. "You 3 must become guardians for the galaxy, protectors of the New Republic. You are Jedi Knights now. You must fight the dark side in all its manifestations." Silgal focused her round eyes on the glowing blade in front of her.
"I will return to my home world, where I'll serve both as a Jedi Knight and an ambassador."
Dorskitty One looked to Kip nervously. Luke then looked at Kip.
"It worries me that the Empire has been so quiet in the last couple of years. I still think the warlords must be planning something. I can imagine no greater service to the New Republic than finding out what's going on." Kip gripped Dorsk 81's arm and felt the clone's heart pounding. Dorsk 81 is coming with me. We'll slip into the uncharted areas of the core systems. Together, we'll try to discover what's become of the Empire. Master Skywalker addressed the other Jedi trainees. I urge you all to consider this. You must become guardians. Think of where you might go. Where you could do the most good. May the Force be with you. True night was impossible in the core systems. Stars clustered so closely together that even the blackest regions of space were a symphony of stellar flares and hot ionized gas. In a navigational hell like this, the beaten Empire hid among the uncharted systems where they could wait and recover, and war upon each other. Admiral Dalla walked, erect and alone, a proud example of Imperial training, as stormtrooper guards provided an armed escort into the rocky fortress of Supreme Warlord Harsk. Her face appeared chiseled in stone, still beautiful but now weathered. Faint lines were etched around her mouth from too many years of clenching her teeth, too many months trying to reunite the feuding warlords who squabbled over the Empire's remaining military might like neck battle dogs tearing a carcass. Dalla's eyes were haunted by shadows, memories of failure, but they flashed when she thought of how simple it would be to strike effectively against the clumsy New Republic. Even now, the rebels still hadn't managed to secure their hold on the galaxy, though the Empire had given them years in which to accomplish it. The stormtroopers formed a tight and comforting honor guard around Dalla as she strode down the fused corridors into the bedrock. Supreme Warlord Harsk had established his stronghold on a rocky planet that orbited close to a red giant star. In orbit, giant solar smelters provided energy and processed raw material to construct Harsk's personal fleet of Imperial-class star destroyers. Upon arrival on the planet, Dalla's loyal second-in-command, Kratos, had gone aboard the flagship Shockwave to inspect the weaponry. Harsk had completed construction on 12 star destroyers so far. Back when she had been ordered to guard Maw installation, the only woman the Emperor ever trusted to hold such a high command, Dalla had commanded 4 Imperial Star Destroyers. And in her private little war against the rebel, she had lost 3 of those ships. She could console herself that she had destroyed a rebel colony, blown up a convoy to a new military base, and attacked and damaged the water world of Calamari. But overall, her tactics had been woefully ill-considered. Her anger had blinded her to the shortcomings of her own schemes. Imperial authorities had commandeered Dalla's remaining troops, and they had scrapped her last remaining ship, the Gorgon. Dalla, though, did not give them the chance to reassign her to a fighting group, preferring instead to act as a freelance ambassador among the war leaders. In a large chamber whose walls had been carved from the rock of the molten world, Supreme Warlord Harsk had installed banks of observation screens. He spun around as Dalla entered.
Ah, Admiral Dalla.
The entire left half of Harsk's head was covered with a mass of thick pink scar tissue, a badge of honor from an explosion during the Battle of Endor.
Your reputation precedes you, he said. I know you have spent the last year trying to sow the seeds of unification. I admire that. I, too, grow tired of this endless civil war. But now you must cease this game. You must throw in your lot with the most powerful warlord, myself.
Dalla bristled.
I understand what you're saying, Supreme Warlord, and your fleet is indeed impressive.
She gestured to the Star Destroyers visible on the central screen.
But I'm not convinced that you could so easily overwhelm your competitors. The moment you grew stronger, the others would form alliances, and the struggle would be even bloodier than before.
The screen switched, and Commander Kratos appeared on it.
Admiral Dalla, excuse me, Warlord Harsk, we've detected incoming ships moving fast. I've spotted 70.
Warlord Harsk shouted,
Sound all alarms!
Dalla caught her breath as she recognized the fleeting forms of 73 Victory-class Star Destroyers, warships about half the size of Imperial Star Destroyers, but these ships made of a crimson alloy were fast and bristling with weapons.
Is this a drill? Dalla said. Are you trying to impress me?
Harsk glared at her.
No, that's High Admiral Teradoc.
he shouted to his star destroyers.
Lock on any target and fire!
Five of the Crimson ships took severe hits, but even those losses were insignificant compared to the sheer numbers in the attacking fleet. On the screen, Dalla could see Kratos snapping to his duty as ranking officer on the bridge, instinctively issuing orders. She was proud of her second-in-command. She had trained him well.
Concentrate all firepower,
Kratos said.
Select one target, destroy it, then move on to the next. Scattered fire won't accomplish anything.
Kratos took Warlord Harsk's flagship to the point of a phalanx formation. The shockwave was larger than the other Star Destroyers, more heavily outfitted with high-energy weapons. The shockwave targeted and fired, obliterating two more victory ships. Then Dalla realized with horror that the shockwave itself was the primary target of the combined assault of the victory ships. They converged like metal filings to a magnet, firing and firing.
We can't hold out much longer,
Kratos said.
Shields failing.
His dark eyes, wide with realization, seemed to be staring directly out of the screen at Dalla.
Admiral, I...
The shockwave cracked apart. The engine spewed unleashed energy in all directions.
Oh, Kratos, Admiral Dalla whispered. I'm sorry.
Achieving their target, the surviving victory ships, 62 of them according to the tally on the data screens, reversed course and streaked toward hyperspace.
Harsk growled. We won't stand for this. We'll get even. And I have the means to do so with you, Admiral Dalla.
Dalla fixed Harsk with a withering glare. I have no intention of assisting you in your childish brawl, Warlord Harsk. You just lost me, the best commander I ever had. I will not perpetuate this...
Stormtroopers!
Harsk shouted.
Admiral Dalla is going to command one of my star destroyers. She will lead our retaliatory strike against High Admiral Teradoc.
He scowled at her.
If she refuses, you will execute her immediately for treason.
Dalla was still stunned at the loss of Kratos, and numb with unchanneled anger.
All right, Harsk.
She intentionally denied him the title of Supreme Warlord. Give me full command of one of your star destroyers, and I will lead your fleet. Commanding the Imperial Star Destroyer Firestorm, Dalla approached the ice-laden ring of the planet Ruavond, where Harsk's spies reported that High Admiral Teradoc was hiding. Dalla stood frozen on the bridge, staring out at the red giant star. Inside her, a cauldron of frustration simmered. She did not want to fight Teradoc. She did not want to fight Harsk. She wanted them both, and all the other squabbling warlords, to fight the cursed rebels. There must be a better way, even if she had to force these others, kicking and screaming, to see it. Harsk's magnified image came to her over the comm system. He kept his half-scarred face turned squarely into the transmission range, flaunting both his ugly and his undamaged side.
Admiral Dalla, I am aboard the Star Destroyer Whirlwind at your flank. You will take the point in our attack. I trust you have already developed a strategy.
Warlord Harsk, I have just begun to study the data your spies gathered on Teradoc's fortress. Give me a moment to assess the possibilities for attack.
No. We lose our element of surprise with each second of delay. It'll be a full frontal attack with all weapons blazing.
Crimson victory ships swarmed out of small planetoids that surrounded the larger one on which Teradoc's fortress stood, but Dalla ordered her troops not to shoot. She looked at the bridge crew under her command.
Tactical officer, I want personal command of the weapon systems.
She moved to the weapons console, and the gunner surrendered his seat.
I am dropping off all power from the turbolaser batteries and concentrating our entire first strike on the ion cannon.
The tactical officer looked at her nervously.
But, Admiral, the ion cannon simply obliterates electrical and computer systems. Are you sure that will be sufficient to accomplish our objective?
It will be sufficient to achieve my goal.
Dalla inputted the targeting coordinates for the Firestorm's ion cannon and placed her finger on the firing button.
Admiral! The weapons sergeant cried. Those coordinates are...
She removed her sidearm and fired a stun blast at the sergeant. Before the others could react, Dalla fired the ion cannon.
The weapon belched out a disruptive blast that washed over the bridge tower of Warlord Hosk's Star Destroyer Whirlwind. Lightning bolts traced 1,000 wicked fingers across the hull, shutting down his command systems, his computers, his life support power. The Firestorm's bridge crew leapt to their feet in an uproar. Dalla shouted down the objections. I am in command of this ship, and you will follow my orders. Open a channel. I want to make sure our Star Destroyers are listening, as well as Teradox.
She stepped into the transmitting area and drew a deep breath.
This is Admiral Dalla. I serve the Empire. I will not fire upon any other loyal Imperial. I have taken a preemptive strike on Warlord Harsk's Star Destroyer to prevent him from attacking another Imperial stronghold. Harsk's attack is in direct response to hostile action taken by High Admiral Teradok. I condemn that action as well. With a stuttering burst of static, Warlord Harsk's image broke in.
Don't listen to her. She's a traitor and a renegade.
I am trying to stop this civil war so we can fight our true enemy. I do not want personal power or political leadership. All I ask is a military command. I will serve under any leader who will devote his forces to defeating the Rebel Alliance once and for all. The Victory-class ships swarmed around them, their weapons sufficient to obliterate Harsk's Star Destroyers, but they held their fire. She punched up the command systems for the Firestorm, keying in her access code, then spoke again into the transmission field. If this is what my empire has become, I no longer wish to serve it. I have just initiated the self-destruct on the Star Destroyer Firestorm. Countdown is set for 15 minutes. Warlord Harsk's ship is powerless and trapped within my deflector shields. Self-destruct will take place unless Harsk issues an immediate command ordering all hostilities to cease. Seated in the command station of the Victory-class Star Destroyer 13X, Vice Admiral Pelion studied this new development, both pleased and perplexed. His cap fit snugly against his gray hair. He tugged at his long mustache as he sifted through the implications of the broadband message. He had heard of Admiral Dalla after the defeat of Grand Admiral Thrawn had left Pelion in personal disgrace. Dalla had come out of nowhere and begun a single-handed attack against the rebels. Vice Admiral Pelion, his navigator said, perhaps we should back off if her self-destruct threat is genuine. If both those Star Destroyers blow, we'll be caught in the shockwave. Pelion sat rigidly for a moment, then shook his head. No, we'll stay right here. Open a channel. He rose slowly from his padded black chair. This is Vice Admiral Pelion, commander of High Admiral Teradok's fleet. As a gesture of good faith and out of respect for Admiral Dalla's request, I hereby order an immediate cessation of hostilities on our part. Teradok's image came through on the comm panel, red-faced and puffing.
Pelion! What do you think you're doing? I order you to press your advantage. Use this opportunity to strike Harsk's Star Destroyers while they are weakened. We can obliterate him completely.
Pelion frowned.
I respectfully disagree, High Admiral. Warlord Harsk is not my enemy. He's not the enemy of the Empire. I think we should confer with this Admiral Dalla and see what she has to say.
Teradok's face turned from red to purple.
You must obey your rightful commander. What would Grand Admiral Thrawn think of you?
Pelion frowned even more deeply as he faced the Warlord's image. Teradok was correct from a certain point of view. Pelion had spent many decades in service to the Imperial Navy. He had commanded Star Destroyers. After the Battle of Endor, he had taken over the Chimera when its own commander had been killed in the hostilities. He had spent the following years trying to regain the status of the Empire through a succession of weak rulers, debilitating surrenders, and losses of territory. Pelion had watched the once magnificent Empire dwindle to a mere island in what had been considered the backwater territories and formerly uninhabitable systems near the core of the galaxy. It wasn't until Grand Admiral Thrawn had come back from the unknown territories that Pelion had finally found a true leader who offered the hope of recapturing lost glory. When Thrawn had fallen, Pelion had lost that hope and went on to merely serve the next Imperial commander he happened to find. Now, though, Admiral Dalla's conviction and enthusiasm and her willingness to risk all for the appropriate cause made something stir within him again. Something powerful. He switched off the comm, then turned to his crew.
Prepare a shuttle and inform Admiral Dalla that I will be coming over. I wish to confer with her in person.
Leaving the Jedi Academy behind, Luke took Callista with him to Coruscant, where Luke had set up a private audience with his sister. In the ornate presidential briefing chambers, Callista sat next to Luke, but he could not feel the binding of her presence around him. It was as if she did not exist in the Force. Luke looked into his sister's large brown eyes. The weight of leadership pressed down heavily upon her. The New Republic was large and scattered, beset by hundreds of problems, brushfire squabbles, and growing threats, and Leia had 3 children to contend with, as well as a husband. "Leia," Luke said, "I have a request, an important favor to ask." She sat up straighter, looking at Callista and then at her brother. "The last time you asked for a favor was to let Kip Duran destroy the Sun Crusher." She bit her lower lip. "But I suppose that came out all right." Luke relaxed. "Nothing so monumental this time. Callista and I have a lot of things to work out between ourselves. We need some time, alone, so we can devote our attention to reawakening her Jedi powers. She could be one of our strongest Jedi if she regains her affinity for the Force. She could teach me a lot. I think the only way we can crack that wall around her is if Callista and I work together intensely." He grasped Callista's hand. "We need a week or so alone to focus on salvaging her powers, not 1,000 other problems. No distractions." Leia smiled wistfully. "I know exactly how you feel." Then she became serious. "I can't order you around, Luke. There's no need for you to ask my permission. Take all the time you want. I wish you the greatest success. Or should I say, may the Force be with you." Luke and Callista went to one of the wind-buffeted docking platforms of the former Imperial Palace. Though Luke couldn't read anything from Callista with his Jedi senses, on her face he saw her obvious eagerness, mixed with fear that they would fail. Leia held the hands of the twins, Jason and Jaina, as she came to see Luke off, while Han carried young Anakin propped against his hip. 3PO and R2 came along at their own pace, though Chewbacca was trying to speed them up.
"Do be patient, Chewbacca," 3PO said. "If you had replaced my leg servo motors last week, as I suggested, I'd be able to move much more efficiently."
Callista stood by Luke's side at the boarding ramp to a nondescript space yacht. Luke saw her in profile. He watched her staring wistfully at Han and Leia's children. He knew exactly what she was thinking. The children. Luke and Callista had spoken of having children of their own if they were to get married. Callista insisted that Luke, being the foremost Jedi master of the day, must have powerful children to make the strong Jedi bloodline flourish, if one were to look at romance in such a cold and imperial fashion. She was terrified that if they had children while she had no access to her powers, their descendants might suffer the same Force blindness. But Luke didn't care. He wanted Callista, though she would not listen when he tried to reassure her. Their only chance lay in severing the invisible chains around her, breaking through the maddening transparent wall. Leia came forward to embrace Luke. He bent down to scoop up the kids in a warm hug.
"Now do I get to hug Callista?"
Han came forward to give her a brief embrace as Leia laughed. Han waved Chewbacca aside.
"Nah, Chewie, you can hug 3PO if you want."
"Well, the very idea,"
3PO said. Luke and Callista set foot on the boarding platform.
"Don't worry, R2, Luke said. "You enjoy your time with 3PO. We need to be by ourselves for a bit."
C-3PO placed a golden hand on the dome of the astromech droid.
"Huh, I can't imagine why they'd need to be completely alone." He patted his counterpart. "Come along, R2. We'll find something useful to do."
As the droids hurried toward the turbo lift, Luke and Callista waved farewell again and prepared for launch. C-3PO and R2-D2 passed through 9 security checkpoints as the turbolift descended deep into Coruscant's crust.
They're obviously droids, 3PO muttered. I simply don't understand why they put us through such indignities to get down here. Virus scanning indeed.
Finally, the doors hissed open and they stepped into the sterile chambers of pulsating mainframe computers in the Imperial Information Center. 3PO explained to R2 what he hoped to find here.
While studying backup files for Mistress Leia, I discovered some troubling computer glitches that I was unable to account for. I can't find any trace of them before the day that horrid Durga the Hutt came to visit. Perhaps you can help me out.
R2 trundled across the polished floor. A battery of observation cameras studied them coldly near the juncture of wall and ceiling. The astromech droid was already accessing a terminal, requesting further details. At R2's shrill of alarm, 3PO strutted over to a screen where the astromech droid had begun replaying archival video records from the security monitoring cameras. 3PO saw from the date on the images that the footage had been taken while Durga's entourage had been meeting with the chief of state in the reception halls far above. R2 manipulated the images, enhancing and enlarging them.
I recognize that.
Just at the edge of the frame, three of the furry, multi-armed Toril that rode on Durga the Hutt's huge body were shown scampering out of the ventilation ducts and up to the unmanned computer consoles. R2 froze another image that showed the Toril deliberately punching in commands into a keypad.
This is most suspicious.
The droids watched as the three Toril completed their command strings and copied a file into a data cylinder, which they hid in their fur. Then they dashed back to the ventilation shafts.
They've copied something from our records. What could they possibly want?
R2 warbled that he would find out, and as he moved the images, he noted the Toril command strings, then input them himself. Passwords entered, the file scrolled onto the screen.
Oh, dear. We must warn Mistress Leia immediately. The Death Star plans have been stolen.
After weeks of work, Bevel Lemelisk presented his modified design of the Death Star to Durga the Hutt, while General Sulemar looked over the engineer's shoulder at the three-dimensional crystal image. As you know, the original design consisted of a giant sphere, Lemelisk said, whose primary purpose was to house the superlaser. All the framework, the decks, the entire external shell also made it into a garrison for one of the Empire's largest troop deployments. But you don't need all that space. As you can see, I have scaled down the outer hull, but increased power at the same time. I have taken the superlaser itself. The image projected the stock of focusing lenses and high-energy multipliers. And I have encased it in a cylindrical shell. Your new weapon will be the super laser alone, surrounded by an armored hull, with appropriate navigational capabilities and a small outer ring of living quarters. With the focusing eye moved to the end of the cylinder, we can achieve greater energy conversion and provide more power to our punch. The image became an actual simulation of the completed weapon, a black armored cylinder rotating in space. As the animation began, the new weapon fired and a brilliant beam shot from one end of the tube. General Sulemar nodded.
That looks like one of those old Jedi weapons, the lightsaber.
Lemelisk smiled, surprised that the pompous Imperial general had seen the connection. Yes, now you understand why I have codenamed this weapon the Dark Saber Project. Hyperspace. En route to a destination Luke Skywalker fervently hoped would become a place of self-discovery, where there would be time to recapture the inner sharing he had once experienced with Callista. Luke hoped that by getting away by themselves, they could find a way to reconnect Callista with the Force. The ship flew through hyperspace on its automatic course. Luke got up from his seat and held out his hand. Let's try a few things, some learning techniques that work for the other Jedi trainees.
But we've been through those already, Callista said in frustration.
Not like this. You've already been trained as a Jedi Knight. You know the techniques. You just can't use them anymore. But there is one thing you can still use.
What?
Luke went to a wall compartment and withdrew two cylinders. Let's try a little fencing. It'll get you thinking and moving like a Jedi again. Maybe that'll be a start. He switched on his weapon and the green energy blade extended. Callista looked down at her own lightsaber, intimidated. Come on, Luke encouraged her. You don't have to use the Force. Just use your eyes and your reflexes. Callista drew a deep breath. And she switched on her own weapon. Luke swung at her. She raised her lightsaber to parry, easing into the contest. Luke had to move fast to counter her blows. He laughed and increased his offense. Callista matched him, move for move. Fencing with Callista challenged Luke as well, because in any other opponent he could use the Force to sense emotional states, to detect subtle changes that hinted at lightsaber moves. But Callista was a disconcerting blank to him, which made them equally matched. She could not sense his moves or his plans, but he couldn't detect hers either. They dueled, feeling their muscles sing with the effort, the unleashed energy and emotions, the delight of testing each other. The mock battle went on for the better part of an hour. Callista had an open, enthralled expression on her face, overjoyed just to recapture part of her former Jedi identity. Finally, they stood. Energy blades crossed, pressing with all their strength, neither yielding. Sweat beaded on Luke's forehead, and he finally broke their locked gaze and stepped back, switching off his lightsaber. Callista also shut hers down. Then, laughing, they embraced. Callista took her shift in the pilot's seat as they both strapped in and watched the diagnostics. Luke kept glancing over at her. We're about ready to leave hyperspace, he said. I can't wait to see this mysterious place you're taking me. The counter ran down on the navicomputer, and the swirling colors snapped into crystal focus, funneling down into bright star points on the black curtain of space. Nearby hung an orange sun of average size. Several bright planets cruised along their orbital paths in the gravity well. Over here, Luke said, pointing. He watched Callista's expression as she noticed the swollen form of a periodic comet, its gases evaporating into space, shedding a comma and a long fuzzy tail as it approached the sun. A comet? Callista said. We're awfully close. Luke gave a secretive smile. Yes, Callista. That's where we're going. As Callista watched him, Luke maneuvered the space yacht closer to the wandering comet. He entered the wispy comma where gas particles and ion trails scintillated against their shields, causing static over the comm system. This is the Malaco Corporation Primordial Water Quarry, Luke said. A long-term periodic comet that comes back every century or so. Right now it's near its closest approach to the sun, and we're at high tourist season. The space yacht approached the irregular lumps swathed in a mane of frozen steam. Luke pointed out squarish machines crawling over the tarnished surface, strip mining the ice. Gas geysers blasted volatiles into space, where the comet's meager gravity could not hold them, trailing a tenuous tail along the comet's orbit. But what do they do here? Callista asked. I've never heard of this system.
Hey, you've been stuck inside a computer for decades, Luke said.
Don't remind me, Callista said. For much of the comet's orbit, he explained, the mining corporation chops away water ice, storing and distilling it. They sell it at a premium to gourmets and high-class officials who like to show off that they settle for only the very best. Luke shrugged. But why did you choose this place? Callista said. The Malaca Corporation quarry sent a homing beacon, and Luke's guidance computer locked on, shepherding them toward a cavernous opening surrounded by lights. Close to perihelion, Luke said. The comet becomes one of the most exclusive resorts in this sector. The climate heats up, enough of the volatiles evaporate from the ice to form a breathable atmosphere, and people can live inside the snowball. It's very unusual. I thought you might like it. Besides, no one will ever find us here. Their yacht passed through the portal, beyond marker lights whose beams shone like lightsabers through the dense mist curling away from the comet's surface. I can't wait to see it. Callista reached over to clasp Luke's hand. They landed in a warmly lit reception area. Oranges and yellows shone into the ever-present mist, and porter droids appeared to unload their luggage. Luke checked in, keying their reservations into an automated terminal, and the droids escorted them into the resort facility. He and Callista held hands as they followed the baggage droids. Callista looked around, her cropped malt-blonde hair swaying slightly. She blinked at her surroundings and grinned. The resort was filled with water and amazing tropical caverns. It was unexpectedly warm for a ball of ice. The frozen walls had been polymerized, showing ice locked behind a molecule-thin impenetrable layer and lit by soothing blue lights. Callista's face filled with wonder. "This is beautiful, Luke. All the water. I love the water."
"I know," Luke said. "You've told me enough stories about how much you miss your home planet, Chad."
Callista looked wistful. She had grown up on a water world, living with her father and stepmother on a sea ranch, destined to follow in the family business, but her Jedi calling had been stronger, and she had been forced to leave her beautiful oceans, though she still longed for them. The porter droids led them down gently curving corridors, past doorways of plush suites, until they came to the set of rooms Luke had reserved. Multicolored glow lamps reflected off the polymerized ice walls, making it seem as if they walked through a rainbow caught in crystal. Delighted, Callista stopped to kiss Luke.
"This is so wonderful. I can feel the power in this place, the energy. I know we'll be able to do something here."
Inside their spacious suite, fountains bubbled in the corners. Mists drifted around the room, passing glowing heaters that made the multiple chambers comfortable and homey.
"According to the brochures, there's plenty of things to do here," Luke said. "We'll suit up and go out to the surface and see one of the erupting gas geysers. They're supposed to be quite spectacular."
She shook her head. "I just want to stay here with you, Luke. We can relax and talk and just be alone for a while."
He closed his eyes and realized how wonderful that sounded. "You won't get any argument from me."
Callista stared into the foaming fountain, a faraway look in her eyes. Luke knew she must be focusing her thoughts, though he still could not sense her, as if the Force itself didn't know she existed.
"I'm thinking of the oceans on Chad," she said, not looking at Luke, but fully aware he was watching her. "Especially at night, at highest tide, when all the moons are full in the sky at the same time. I miss it, Luke. I miss my family. Of course, they all died years ago, while I was trapped in that computer."
Her lower lip began to tremble.
"Part of me feels guilty for not staying with them. But I carried that around all the years I was a Jedi. I don't have any regrets, just sadness."
She turned and looked at him. Her eyes were dry and strong.
"But my Jedi master, Jyn Altis, came and showed me the Jedi way. He arrived on his big wandering ship, the Chunthor."
"I know," Luke said. "We found the wreck of the Chunthor on Dathomir and brought it back."
"I suppose I must have known Jyn Altis was dead. Perhaps he ran afoul of the Night Sisters."
Callista's eyebrows knitted together.
"I remember once when Master Altis took me on a long, low flight above the seas of Chad. We cruised over singing schools of Syene and the patterns of tubular eels glowing pink in the moonlight. Master Altis taught me how to sense the life forms with my new abilities. I didn't believe him at first, but when he showed me how easy it was, I knew I was a Jedi."
Luke went to a table and pulled out a small disc, a blue chit that gave them a meal discount in one of the Malacco Corporation's fine restaurants.
"Let's try something,"
Luke said, channeling his thoughts through the Force. The small chit rose off his hand and hung suspended in the air.
"I'm going to hold this up. You try to nudge it. Bump it toward me. That should be easier than actually lifting it. Open yourself to the Force and let it flow. Just a slight push."
"I'll try,"
Callista said doubtfully, then caught herself as Luke replied,
"There is no try."
"I know. I know I shouldn't have said that."
Callista squeezed her eyes shut and concentrated. Luke sent out small, questing tendrils to see if he could detect her manipulating the Force. The blue disc hovered motionless in the air. Callista's face flushed with the effort. And finally she let out a shuddering breath and opened her eyes, her forehead creased with frustration.
"I can't. There's nothing."
Before Luke could speak, she held up a hand.
"Please, don't lecture me. Not now. You don't need to train me. I know how to do it. But I can't."
Luke squeezed her hand instead.
"Don't lose hope, Callista. Please, don't lose hope."
6 stormtroopers marched briskly into the bridge of Admiral Dalla's firestorm, hustling a trim, mature man.
Vice Admiral Pilian, I presume, Dalla said in a calm voice. I'm pleased you could join me here at the moment of our death.
Pilian swallowed. Admiral Dalla, I've heard much about you. I find it unlikely that you would be bluffing. I wish Warlord Harsk were similarly convinced.
Warlord Harsk's grainy image appeared on the comm screen.
All right. Cease the countdown. I order all hostilities to end immediately. Dalla, damn you, stop the self-destruct.
Pilian sat across from Dalla in her private ready room adjoining the bridge. Dalla peeled off her black gloves, smoothed her flaming hair, and folded her hands together. I want to unify the Empire. I want someone to take the helm as leader, but I don't intend for it to be me. I have no delusions of political glory. I just want to cause more damage to the rebels.
Should we call a detente council, then?
Pilian said.
Perhaps we could get the warlords together. Make them sit down and talk. Perhaps they could agree on strategy. Divide the New Republic into target zones, and then each can strike using their own tactics to bring the rebels to their knees.
Pilian's eyes glittered with excitement. Dalla nodded. An exceptionally good suggestion, Vice Admiral, similar to my own ideas. You are perhaps in a better position to make those invitations, though I will do what I can. She went to a cyberlocked strongbox beside her personal bureau. She opened it and withdrew a palm-sized breath mask membrane and handed it to Pilian. If that doesn't work, I want you to take this.
What is it for?
I hope you never need to use it, but if all else fails, you will know. Zoss Beacon transmitted its blind signal into the fiery soup of stars and gases near the heart of the deep core. The automated station had been constructed primarily by droids and a few suicide crews on a lifeless rocky planetoid, scoured clean by the endless wash of radioactive storms and solar flares that swept the region. No living thing had visited Zoss Beacon for 15 years. Admiral Dalla considered it the perfect place to hold a meeting of Imperial warlords. Pilian had persuaded 13 of the strongest Imperial warlords to come for the talks. The warlords arrived with their fleets bristling with weapons, and Dalla knew that the slightest misstep could trigger an internecine holocaust that would wipe out the remains of the Imperial military. She contacted each fleet as it came in. Only the warlord is allowed to approach. The warlords argued, insisting on their personal escorts, but Dalla refused to allow it. Acting as honor guard, Pilian stood to one side of the door of the squat citadel, whose low walls were more than a meter thick to block the planet's radiation. High Admiral Teradoc was the first to pass through the doorway, fat and sweaty-faced, staggering even in the low gravity. He flicked a venomous glance at Pilian, dismissing the vice-admiral who had abandoned him. After him came Supreme Warlord Harsk, then Superior General Delvartis, a tall, skeletally thin man with bristling white eyebrows. Following Delvartis came an endless string of high moffs, honored overlords, supreme leaders, and other warlords with pompous yet meaningless titles. When the last of the warlords had taken his seat, Pilian clicked his heels, marched briskly to the front, and stood beside Dalla.
I want to thank you all for coming here. I know this meeting is a difficult compromise, but you must hear us out for the future of the Empire.
Dalla rose slowly to her feet and swept her gaze across the warlords. I have seen what remains of the Imperial Starfleet. Because of your rivalries, every one of your sectors has devoted vast resources to creating weaponry. It is time to use those resources against our real enemies, instead of against each other.
Fine words, Admiral Dalla.
Warlord Harsk mockingly clapped his hands.
And how do you propose that we do that?
By forging an alliance. If the rebels can do it, so can we.
Superior General Delvartis stood up to leave.
This is just a poorly disguised power grab. I've spent more funds than any of you on military build-up. I'm not sharing my glory.
As he turned his back to Dalla, she touched a hidden control panel under the table.
The heavy Durasteel door slammed into place, sealing gaskets around the edges. Delvardis whirled.
What is this?
That is a cyberlock door with a timing mechanism. Even I can't open it for 3 hours. You will sit down, Delvardis. The Imperial commanders bellowed and hammered their fists and lashed out at each other, but Dalla stood firm. You have 3 hours to choose a nominal leader. We are all sealed inside this chamber. So, make the best of it. With each hour, the squabbling grew more strident, more childish. Old vengeances were declared, betrayals and reprisals hurled in one another's faces. For the first hour, Dalla kept her anger simmering inside. In the second hour, she wanted to bash their skulls together. In the middle of the third hour, Warlord Harsk lost control of himself during a shouting match with Teradot. The little scar-faced man leapt across the table and launched himself at the obese High Admiral, trying to wrap his fingers around Teradot's throat. Enough! In utter disgust, Dalla spoke. I didn't want to rule. I had no intention of becoming a political leader. I wanted to crush the rebels instead. But you give me no choice. I cannot leave the Empire in the hands of fools like you. Dalla reached into the hip pocket of her olive-gray uniform and withdrew a translucent breath mask, which she placed over her mouth and nose. She activated the mask and it sealed itself to her face. Beside her, Pelion looked on with dawning comprehension. He grabbed for his own mask as Dalla reached under the table and pressed a button, triggering the nerve gas systems she had had droids install before the meeting. The hissing sounds in the air vents were like serpents expelling venomous breath into the room. The warlords howled at the treachery. Dalla noted with amusement that at last they had found a way to do something together. On Coruscant, Leia and Han discussed the latest revelation about Durga the Hutt's activities. Chewbacca ventured a loud opinion.
Yeah, I was thinking that, Chewie.
Han turned to Leia.
The Hutts probably know we suspect something. They probably got spies scattered throughout the Imperial Palace. We have to be careful.
Leia nodded. So, since they know we're hunting for clues, let's create a diversion. We'll take Durga up on his offer.
Han looked at her blankly. What offer? You'd accept something from a Hutt?
Leia shrugged. He invited us to make a return visit of state.
I'm sure he didn't mean it, but he can't back down now that the invitation's been made.
Let's set up a diplomatic mission on the spot. Head out to Nal Hutta as soon as possible. That way, Durga will have no forewarning. And we'll be accompanied by the New Republic fleet. Wedge and Akbar can set up some war games, and our ships can provide an impressive show of force. If the Hutts happen to get intimidated in the process, so much the better. Let them be nervous, wondering what we're really up to, and we'll poke around to find some answers.
3PO piped up, But Mistress Leia, how do you expect to learn anything if you're so obvious about it?
Leia looked mischievous. If we come in with all the flash and dazzle we can muster, he may just be blinded to what else we're doing. Meanwhile, Chewbacca and R2 can take the Falcon and go to Nar Shaddaa, the smuggler's moon. It's a seedy place where all the black market dealings come and go. Chewie might be able to find something out there. And R2 as well, Leia added. You two poke around. See what you can find. And then we'll compare notes. Chief of State Leia Organa Solo's diplomatic cruiser entered the Nal Hutta system.
They have spotted us, Han said.
They already knew we were coming, Leia said. We sent the Hutts notice at least half an hour ago. She stepped to the upper bridge. Please open a channel. When the Hutts responded, Leia complained, Where is my official escort fleet? I expected that Lord Durga would take care of that. The Hutt respondent was a lowly worm, thin with a narrow head, obviously not a powerful crime lord like Jabba or Durga.
Excuse me, Madam President, but Lord Durga is not here. We are unable to meet...
What do you mean? Durga isn't here. He invited us to visit him at our convenience.
I'm sorry, Madam President, but Lord Durga is away, on business. If only you had given us some warning.
Leia raised her chin haughtily. We are coming down, and we expect to be well treated. See to it. She signed off, then burst out laughing.
Han applauded her performance. Nalhutta was a bog, flat and sunken like a sewage reclamation reservoir, with standing puddles and sickly-looking marsh grasses. Leia, Han, and Threepio stepped away from the diplomatic ship and waited for the hut sail barge to receive them. Above, the sky was draped with gray clouds, and greasy rain began pelting them, cold droplets clotted with residue from massive strip mining operations. The sail barge hovered above. A thin hut slithered along the top deck. Leia recognized the narrow, emaciated face of the creature she had argued with over the comm system.
Greetings, Chief of State Leia Organa Solo. I welcome you in the name of his great obesity, the Lord Durga. I am Korda, special envoy and slave to Lord Durga. My master is on his way and should be here shortly. He insists that I show you the pleasure of his private bathhouses while you wait.
Korda beamed with pride as he gestured at the enclosed labyrinth beneath the palace. The walls, which were covered with mold and fungus, held acres of sluggish, steaming water.
This bathhouse is Lord Durga's pride and joy, Korda said.
Wonderful, Han murmured. Things splashed and swam in the twisted channels, lost in the mist above the surface.
This fresh water is pumped in directly from the bogs, lumps and all.
Leia hugged herself in the clinging robe Korda had provided. You expect us to swim in this?
Oh, no!
Korda flinched in horror.
These canals are for Lord Durga and other huts. We would not allow a human to pollute the water.
We certainly wouldn't want to offend Durga, Han said.
No, we have a species-segregated section for some of our honored visitors.
Korda led them to a warm, crystal-clear pool with rough stone steps leading down. Han and Leia slowly lowered themselves into the warm, fizzy water. Leia sighed as the liquid heat swirled around her aching joints.
In spite of myself, I might enjoy this.
Leia grew drowsy. Gradually, she became aware of ripples stirring the hairy green seaweed. Something large moved beneath the surface, easing toward them. She sat up straighter, stiffening. A sloping mound heaved itself out of the bog water near the canal divider opposite Han and Leia.
Durga the Hutt boomed. Welcome, Leia Organa Solo. I am pleased to see you again so soon.
Leia tried to mask her shock.
Lord Durga, welcome home.
This is such a surprise.
Durga heaved himself higher so that seaweed sloughed off his sloping head.
Does this mean you're anxious now to form an alliance with the Hutt Syndicate?
Don't jump to conclusions, Han said.
Leia squeezed his arm. Let me handle this, Han. And if we decide an agreement with the Hutts is a wise thing, we'll move quickly. Durga seemed surprised and uneasy.
We must not rush a decision as important as this. We need to take great pains to ensure that all are satisfied with our alliance.
I see. Leia pursed her lips. Durga was just stalling. His initial overture on Coruscant had merely been a ruse to gain access to the Imperial Information Center.
I noticed your battle fleet near our system, Madam President. I can't help but express my concern.
Leia raised her hand out of the water with a splash. We're going to be allies, remember? If we can work out a deal. Don't let a little thing like a few warships engaged in simulated combat bother you. Durga chuckled.
Bother me? You misunderstand. I'm surprised you have excess warships that can be wasted on games.
We haven't had any problems with the Empire at large for a couple of years. Our fleet needs to keep in practice. Durga widened his eyes and laughed.
The Empire may be doing more than you think. To show you my good intentions, let me offer you a service, something for which the Hutts are justly famous. While you're here on Nalhutta, allow me to offer you the services of one of my information brokers.
I'll instruct him to check up on what the Empire has been up to recently. I think you may be surprised.
As night fell outside the opulent palace of Durga the Hutt, General Krixmadeen, Supreme Allied Commander for New Republic Intelligence, slipped through the gathering gloom, disguised in tatters, dirt smeared over his face. He worked his way between run-down prefab shacks erected in a squatter's village around the heavily guarded spaceport. Carrying a partially concealed glow lantern, Medin squatted down beside the wire mesh fence that blocked access to the spaceport landing field and pulled the glow lantern from the billows of his tattered cloak. He reached inside and withdrew a moon moth with powder-blue gossamer wings that beat gently as it tried to fly. "Not yet," Medin said. "Pause." The moth, a perfect replica of a common insect crafted by Coruscant's finest droid specialists, froze. Medin held the moth in the palm of his hand and pointed it toward Durga's well-lit hyperspace yacht. "Acquire target." The moth's antennae gyrated, and its wings trembled in affirmation. "Launch." The moth lifted into the air, spiraling on the night breezes, and alit on the outer hull of Durga's yacht. The tiny droid paused only long enough to deposit its precious egg, a microscopic droplet. Then it beat its wings and rose. The moth's mission had been successful. And now Medin would be able to track Durga's movements wherever the hut went. Luke woke in the middle of the night to see Callista standing over him, her slender body silhouetted against pale, watery light, a backwash of reflections that penetrated the polymerized ice walls in the comet quarry. He sat up. "Callista? What is it?" Warm mists curled around her like steam, and he had an eerie sense of déjà vu, a flash of memory from when he had seen her spectral image while she was trapped inside the eye of Palpatine. "Luke, we shouldn't be here." He increased the light from the glow panels. "Why not?" He stood to hold her. She felt soft and warm, fitting comfortably into his embrace. "This place is beautiful and peaceful. What better spot could there be for us to spend some time?" Callista stared deeply at him with her gray eyes. "This is romantic and private, Luke, but that's all. The Comet Quarry has no focus, no connection to anything that matters to us. It's not personal. I've got to work with something personal." She pressed her lips together, then continued with greater conviction. "Oh, Luke, why not take me to where you learned the Force? I'll see it through my own eyes, and you can guide me." A silvery tinkle of water spattered from the fountains. The solidified ice walls were thick and muffling. He and Callista seemed isolated, frozen, away from everyone else, as she had been frozen inside the computer banks for so many decades. He squeezed her tightly. "Yes. I can show you many places. It'll be like a pilgrimage to the worlds that influenced my life." She followed him as he walked out of the sleeping chamber into the common room. He whispered his request to the recessed computer terminal. As the computer sorted public access navigation charts, Luke sat down, and Callista took a seat beside him, running her long fingers across his shoulders. He studied the navigational analysis in an outwardly spiraling list of distances. He sighed wistfully as he found his target. "All right." He turned to Callista. "Looks like we'll go to Dagobah first." In the swampy zones of Dagobah, clouds formed a thick band across the sky, a belt of storms that Luke's ship plowed through. He increased the shields to protect the space yacht from being damaged by lightning, the way his X-Wing had been the first time he had come to find the Jedi Master Yoda. Luke talked of Yoda as he brought their space yacht through a break in the thick jungle canopy. "The first time I landed here in a bog, and my X-Wing sank. I thought I'd never get out until Yoda used the Force to heave my ship out of the water. I thought it was impossible. He told me that's why I failed." When Luke cracked open the hatch, the buzz of millions of life forms assaulted his ears, a chorus of natural sounds that made the jungles of Yavin 4 peaceful by comparison. "This place is so alive," Callista said beside him. I can see it and hear it, but I can't feel the life force as I should. Luke clasped her hand.
You will.
They trudged away from the ship and into the brooding swamps. Luke didn't want to return to the place where he had sat beside the old Jedi Master's deathbed, learning the truth about his father and his sister, watching his wrinkled-faced teacher fade into nothingness as his spirit left his body after 900 years. He and Callista climbed over fallen trees, disturbing creatures that fled into darker hollows, splashing into the swamp.
Why do you stay with me, Luke?
Callista asked suddenly.
You are a Jedi Master, one of the heroes of the Rebellion. You could have anyone you want.
Luke raised his hand to cut off her comments.
I don't just want anybody, Callista. I want you.
That's fine, Luke, but you have to think of more than your feelings. You have the responsibility to the New Republic, to the Jedi Knights.
If I'm powerless, I'll drag you down.
Longingly, Luke caressed her arm.
You won't, Callista.
Abruptly, she stepped away from him.
Yes, if I can't have my powers back, then
we shouldn't stay together. I don't want to always be in your shadow, unable to do the things you do so easily, the things I used to do myself. Suddenly, a swarm of night bats crashed out of the swamp trees and swooped around them. They had leathery wings and insectile bodies with 6 thin legs bearing sharp claws. 2 clutched Callista's hair, tugging it and fighting with each other as she thrashed them away. Luke drew his lightsaber and Callista yanked hers free. Luke clipped off the wings of a night bat even as more swirled in. Callista swung her lightsaber at the creatures with brute force. Her attack disturbed Luke. It was filled with a fury and a wild abandon he had never seen in her. She yelled at the night bats as if they were an incarnation of her greatest enemy.
It's not fair!
She flashed her gaze at Luke.
I finally found you, and now I might have to give you up.
She chopped with the blade in such an explosion of fury that she sliced through 3 of the night bats.
Leave us alone!
As she shouted at the bats, she unconsciously pushed. The remaining night bats spiraled away in confusion, shrieking into the night. Then Callista lowered her energy blade, slumping weakly in the aftermath of what she had done. Luke deactivated his own lightsaber and stared at her in amazement.
I opened up for just a second, she said.
I know. I could feel it. Callista looked up at him, her eyes very afraid.
But it was the dark side, Luke. We both recognized it.
The growing magnificence of the Darksaber filled Bevel Lemelisk with joy as he watched from the distant Orko Skymine expeditionary ship. The latticework of main supports had taken shape, folding the durasteel net into a cylindrical tube like a gigantic wind tunnel. The Toral workers were the key to the success of the superlaser that could crack planets. They were Durga's masterstroke. The hive-minded little creatures scurried over the construction site, working cooperatively. If everything worked right, the superweapon would be built in a fraction of the time that space construction normally required. The greatest flaw of the Toro, Levelisk had found, was that they were distractible. When an asteroid soared too close to the construction site or a smuggler ship flew within view, the Toro focused their attention on the new site. When the fuzzy creatures returned to their work, many attached themselves to different stations, connecting the wrong girders together, hooking the wrong circuits. Studying the supports more closely, Lemelisk felt his heart sink into his paunchy stomach. A large section of the Darksaber outer framework was assembled incorrectly. The computer core receptacle was connected to the waste heat exhaust. The superlaser anchor points were 90 degrees apart from each other. He felt his stomach churning in dread that Durga would find out about the delay and order him to be killed again.
The ice world of Hoth hung beneath its coterie of moons like a cracked snowball. Callista piloted their space yacht, following the coordinates Luke had given her. He leaned forward in the passenger seat, tingling with anticipation. Down there, that's where Obi-Wan's spirit first came to me when I was nearly frozen in a blizzard. He told me to go to Dagobah to find Yoda. Han tried to convince me it was just a hallucination. Callista sat, subdued, gripping the controls. She had been reluctant to tamper with her locked Jedi powers ever since her brush with the dark side on Dagobah. Luke was concerned that her reticence and anxiety would do more damage than any of her actual failures had, because now she was afraid to try. Somehow, Luke had to dispel that fear. Callista stared at the ice planet as they skimmed through the misty atmosphere. I wish my master Jyn Octis would come to me in a vision. I'm sure he could offer some insight. Luke didn't know how to respond, so he squeezed her hand. She looked at him with a mixture of annoyance and frustration. I'll be all right, Luke. I haven't given up.
I'm glad to hear that.
And down there is the next place to try. Luke indicated the white pock glacier fields beneath their soaring yacht. This is where I really learned to fight. I had flown my X-Wing against the first Death Star, but here, during the Battle of Hoth against the Imperial Walkers, this is where I learned to be a warrior. I left the wreckage of Echo Base to find Yoda, and one of the first things he told me was that wars don't make a person great.
They don't, Callista said, but sometimes you have to fight.
As they approached the line of rocky hummocks, Luke spotted a blackened hulk lying in the snow.
Hey, what's that ship?
Can't be a leftover crash from the battle. That was 9 years ago. This is something new.
She brought their yacht down near the wreckage, close to the hidden shield doors that sealed off Echo Base's catacombs in the solid ice. Luke opened the uniform locker and removed the two insulated jumpsuits hanging beside a pair of full environment suits. They pulled on the uniforms, activating the body heaters and tugging on gloves. Their boots crunched on the ice-hard snow as they walked to the wrecked ship. Luke looked over at the snow-camouflaged opening of Echo Base. Maybe they took shelter there. He saw the blaster cannon turrets on either side of the shield door. Let's check this out, but be careful. As they approached the shield doors, the pair of blaster cannon emplacements standing like sentinels suddenly came to life.
Look out!
Callista shoved Luke out of the way. He dived to one side, using his Jedi powers to fling himself farther. Callista rolled, hitting the ground as the first blast seared out. The turret swiveled, targeting on Luke, and fired again. He leapt into the air, and the beam missed him, exploding one of the frozen rocks.
Must be motion detectors, Luke. I'm gonna run and focus their targeting on me. You use your Jedi powers to knock out both weapons.
No! It's too...
But Callista was already on her way. Luke knew this was the way she did things. She made up her mind and then took action without considering the risks, or even alternatives. As she sprinted in a zigzag pattern across the snow, both blaster cannon emplacements swiveled, locking in on her. Luke plunged forward until he landed in front of the cannon. Holding his lightsaber in one hand, he scrambled up the tower and slashed with the glowing blade, severing the barrel of the weapon. He threw himself onto the snow and scrambled to the second turret just as the damaged one fired. The second weapon targeted Callista. She danced to one side. The explosion was sufficient to hurl Callista into the air. Luke used his lightsaber to hack at the emplacement. The ominous barrel stuttered for a moment, seeking another target, then went dead.
Good work, Callista said as they brushed each other off. We're a team, even without my Jedi powers.
With a reluctant, heavy thud, the shield door began to rise up. Figures appeared in the partially open door.
Don't just stand there. Get inside, quick, before those creatures come back.
A dark-eyed man wearing the shadowy stains of beard stubble and the remnants of white armor stepped outside holding a blaster rifle. Beside him came a hairy feline alien with tufts of fur sprouting from his chin and fangs protruding below his lips. A Kathar, Luke recognized. Another human man, tall and broad-shouldered, stood within the main tunnel, gesturing for them to hurry. Only 5 of them had survived.
Seemed an easy way to make a few credits, said Burke,
a former stormtrooper who had deserted the Empire in the turmoil following the Battle of Endor.
I hooked up with these two Kathar, Nodan and Nonak.
The feline who had been at the door was joined by another. They appeared identical except for slight variations in fur color. Burke continued,
There's a huge black market price on wampa pelts, you know. So the Kathar brothers and I decided to set up big game expeditions. For a fee, we'd take hunters here to track down and kill the biggest game in the galaxy.
Rich, barren administrators like him.
Burke gestured to the tall, muscular man with chiseled features, a white smile, and hardened eyes. The muscular man introduced himself.
Drum Guldi, Baron Administrator of the Kelrodo I Gelatin Mines, and this is my aide.
He indicated a nervous-looking man with gray-blonde hair and faint wrinkles. Synodic. Burke, the stormtrooper, continued with his story.
This was our third run. The other two went smoothly. We would track the wampas, bag one or two, and then leave. By this time, the monsters had learned how to work together. We thought they were dumb brutes, but we were wrong. We came back and found our pilot slaughtered. They killed one of our guides and the other three clients. Luckily, we got to shelter in Echo Base here.
Drom Guldi picked up the story businesslike and matter-of-fact.
That's when they blew up our ship.
We've been here for 4 days, no supplies, and those things are out there, waiting for us.
You can't all fit in our ship, Callista said, anticipating their next question. It's only a small yacht. But we can transmit a distress signal, get a rescue crew here within a day or so. Luke met Callista's gaze. Helping people was one of the primary responsibilities of a Jedi Knight. They decided they would all go together to Luke and Callista's craft.
We can make a dash for it, Burke said. We've only got a dozen charges each left in our blasters.
The shield door opened and freezing air and snow gusted in. As they approached their ship, Luke saw that the hatch stood open. Callista said, Hey, I didn't leave the door like that.
The comm system had been torn to shreds.
The panels ripped open with the silver scoring of claws. The navicomputer was gone, torn from its housing and smashed to a tangle of wires and broken chips. Terror took hold in the pit of Luke's stomach. He turned to the locker where the environment suits had hung and found that the snow creatures had slashed both suits, making them unusable. Then came a shout from outside and sudden blaster fire. Luke could barely distinguish the creatures. Their white pelts made them only a blur of movement, curving horns sweeping from their heads. Claws like knives extended as they boiled up, slashing and tearing and roaring. Burke drew both his blaster pistols and fired, leaving a huge wampa dead in the snow with smoking holes in its fur. He tried to fire again, but one of his pistols had been drained dry. The wampas bellowed an odd howl that careened across the empty steps. Drom Guldi fired carefully and precisely, taking out another wampa. One of the two Kathar shot indiscriminately, lancing the snowy expanse until his rifle also ran out of charge. Hearing an echoing roar that seemed somehow familiar, Luke turned to see a huge wampa standing on a rock outcropping, howling into the night as if directing the battle. This monster had only one arm. Its other ended in a cauterized stump. It slashed its single fistful of claws through the icy air as it saw the Jedi lightsaber. Chewbacca landed the Millennium Falcon in one of the exorbitantly priced docking bays of Nar Shaddaa, the planetoid in the Hutt system more familiarly known as Smuggler's Moon. In the grease-encrusted, machine-humming metropolis, R2 jacked into a tourist information kiosk, a thinly disguised directory of black market services and vendors. Chewbacca then went through 100 credits, bounced from one scrap of information to another, until, in a narrow, dim alley, he and R2 finally found a decrepit old slicer, whose face was a mass of warts and flaking skin. The slicer carried his own portable terminal and a laser welder, which he used to cut into the power sources and splice his input cables into computer systems, where he would work undetected for a few hours or a day, and then he would slip off to find another place to work.
No, this thing, the slicer said. Nothing for Durga.
The slicer scowled at his keyboard.
I didn't say there aren't any. I just can't find the files. They must be coded or require passwords. Wait a minute. I was looking for files about Durga, but let's do a broader-based search. Track down anybody who's selling things to Durga.
The slicer's fingers flew over the keypad.
Yes, an Imperial customer, General Sulemar. He's apparently working with the Hutts. According to these files, this General Sulemar is a big boss in charge of everything the Hutts do around here.
If the Empire and the Hutts had indeed teamed up,
they would make a formidable enemy. This threat was far worse than they had feared. The ice creatures lunged in a mass of white fur, spread claws, and flying blood.
Watch your back, Callista!
Luke yelled. He slashed his lightsaber as a white-furred monster bore down on her. Burke, the former stormtrooper, fired until he emptied his second blaster pistol. One of the Kathars, Nodon, fired useless bursts from his blaster rifle, the last trickle of charge. A huge wampa rose before him, knocking him to the snow. Nonak hissed in fury and leapt to Nodon's aid. He sprang onto the back of the wampa and slashed with his own claws, biting with sharp fangs into the wampa's neck. From the rocky outcropping where he directed the battle, the one-armed brute roared. The wampas came in, focused on a single target. They tore Nonak apart. Burke took a quick inventory. My blaster pistols are out of charge, but I have some makeshift spears. Nodon's rifle is drained. Dromguldi, what have you got left? The big game hunter inspected his weapon. 10 shots. They all turned to see Synodic in the clutches of a bloodied wampa whose claws dripped with gore. Dromguldi fired 3 times in rapid succession, and the monster fell. Luke and Callista pulled out their lightsabers. Nodon yowled and threw himself upon the nearest wampa, but the others turned and fell upon him. The Kathar went down fighting. Burke thrust and jabbed his spears, but they were pitifully useless against the bloodthirsty wampas. The snow monsters swallowed him up. With his lightsaber, Luke sliced a towering creature in two. Dromguldi emptied his 7 remaining shots, killing a wampa each time. He tossed the blaster rifle to the ground and laughed, his eyes bright, his tan face flushed. Come on! Get what's coming to you! The wampas came. The one-armed wampa lunged for Callista. She couldn't react fast enough. Luke yelled, "No!" and cut sideways with his lightsaber, putting all the force behind his swing. He freed the one-armed snow creature in half. The controls of the space yacht were smashed. The navicomputer was gone. The comm system was ripped out. As the wampas battered the hull of the space yacht with rocks, Luke and Callista set to work, removing dented or slashed panels and trying to cross-wire anything just to get them lifted off. Finally, Luke triggered the firing button, and the space yacht's engines roared to life at full power. They had no control. The ship lurched off the ground, plunging upward into the night. True to his word, Durga did provide Leia with access to one of his private information brokers. Gamorrean guards dragged a cart with creaking wheels into the hut dining hall, where carrion birds perched on ledges waiting for dropped food. A huge spiral-shaped mollusk shell filled the cart, its ridges worn and covered with algae. The emaciated hut, Korda, slithered forward to rap briskly on the shell with a stick. A fleshy appendage nudged out of the hole in the shell, protruding like a long tongue. The creature had a cluster of 5 milky white eyes on its smooth, rounded head.
"What do you want?"
the creature said. Korda glared at the shell creature.
"Durga the Hutt commands that you provide information to these guests. They need to know about Imperial activities."
The information broker grumbled.
"Information on Imperial activities, eh? Couldn't narrow it down a little, I suppose."
"Yes," Leia said. "We want to know what the remnants of the Empire are up to right now."
"Oh, good. That's much easier. Do you require a specific listing of every individual's activities? I have records of 5 billion or so. Or would generalizations be good enough?"
"Generalizations would be sufficient." The smooth head slipped back into the dark opening, and Leia heard muffled rummaging sounds as the creature stirred about. Then the head popped up again and turned its eye cluster toward Leia.
"You're in luck," plenty of schemes afoot. The forces have been unified, squabbling warlords executed, starship construction increased tenfold. The Imperial military forces have clustered around a single commander.
Do you know what their plans are?
The scattered Imperial fleets have come together with such a build-up of weapons. They are almost certainly planning a major assault against the New Republic. Specific target unknown, so don't bother to ask. May I go now?
Wait, Han interrupted. Who is this new Imperial commander?
All right.
The information broker slithered back into the shell. It rummaged around for an interminable time before it finally popped out again.
Dala. The person in charge of the Imperial forces is Admiral Dala. I have no more information. Good night.
Han looked sickened. But how could it be Dala? She's dead. Leia met his eyes. Apparently not. In Admiral Dala's hands, the remnants of the Empire were a machine, a massive, cohesive engine being tuned to peak performance. Cogs spun, components fit together. Armament factories received resources from other systems and processed them into additional weapons. TIE fighters, blast boats, AT-ATs, and major structural pieces of new Star Destroyers. Dala reveled in the progress report she received. Now aboard her great black ship, the Nighthammer, which she had seized when the warlord Delvartis's second-in-command Cronus agreed to join her growing force, she progressed from system to system, knitting together once scattered allegiances, drawing tight the Imperial net. She paced around the Nighthammer's ready room, a private strategy chamber that was itself as big as the entire command deck on a Victory-class Star Destroyer.
"As I see it, Admiral," Pelion said slowly, "we have two obvious primary targets. The first is Coruscant, the capital, the most heavily populated and heavily fortified world in the New Republic."
"I agree," Dala said. "However, the battle for Coruscant will be long and bloody. We will lose a large portion of our new fleet if we choose that as our first target. What I'm looking for, Pelion, is a decisive victory. We need a morale-building strike that will set the rebels reeling and make our own troops ecstatic with renewed patriotism. At that point, we can come back with twice our strength and hammer Coruscant to rubble. I have such a target in mind. Are we thinking of the same one?" Her green eyes fixed on his. Pelion answered without hesitation.
"Yavin 4, where the new Jedi training center is located."
Dala's smile congratulated him.
"Yes. The Jedi Knights are powerful symbols to the rebels, and they will be powerful enemies if we let them proliferate."
"I suggest that we diversify our strike. Allow Colonel Cronus, as you know he is an excellent commander, to take his victory fleet and strike at dozens of minor targets so that the rebels believe they're under attack at all points. This will cause damage far beyond the risk, and it will add to the turmoil and confusion of our own surprise attack."
Dala nodded.
"We'll begin at once."
Kip Duron hunched forward in front of the control panel, his dark eyes narrowed as he scanned the enemy forces arrayed around them. Dorskiddy 1 piloted their stolen Imperial ship into the massed battle fleet. His slender, olive hands fidgeted nervously. His yellow eyes stared in astonishment and fear, unable to believe what Kip had talked him into doing.
"There certainly are a lot of ships," he said. "We'll be blown out of space the moment they suspect us."
Kip waved his hand dismissively. "They won't suspect anything. This ship has all the right markings." Since they were both skilled pilots, Kip and Dorskiddy 1 had been able to figure out how to fly the ship they'd appropriated from an unguarded outer station. As a huge supply convoy passed the depot, the Imperial activity had swirled around them, obviously on the verge of an enormous demonstration of military strength. Over the past few days, Kip and Dorskiddy 1 had penetrated deeper and deeper into the core systems. Kip had watched with growing horror as he realized just how far along the Empire's plans were. They had seen weapons depots, giant factories that spewed out TIE fighters by the hundreds, construction yards with skeletal frames of Imperial Star Destroyers in progress.
"I still think we should get out of here," Dorskiddy 1 said. "We need to bring this information back to the New Republic.
Kip shook his head. Now we've got to see exactly what they're up to. The comm system crackled.
Shuttle pilot, hurry up. Here's a vector for you to follow. The Admiral would be most displeased if late arrivals disturbed their speeches.
Dorsk 81 stared blankly at the speaker, but Kip instantly responded.
On our way. Apologies for the inconvenience. He snapped off the comm system.
They're gonna let us in. Other ships clustered around a staggeringly immense grid of landing platforms and docking bays. The coordinates took them to a central platform where thousands of ships had already gathered. Figures streamed toward the open mall area of the Nexus station, a room for an audience of tens of thousands. Kip rummaged in the shuttle's uniform bin and pulled out two sets of overalls with the insignia of the repair team assigned to the outer depot where they had stolen the shuttle. Here, we'll wear these and nobody will know the difference. In the distant center of the open space, a speaking deck had been raised to enclose a podium, tall amplifiers, and a turbo lift that could bring guests onto the stage without forcing them to pass through the packed crowds. A gaunt, trim old man was speaking in a precise voice. He looks familiar, Kip said. Stormtrooper guards appeared out of nowhere, their white armor clacking.
Silence while Vice Admiral Pelion is speaking.
The main phase of our assault will be a decisive attack on the new training facility, where the rebels are attempting to create a commando force of their own sorcerers, the Jedi Knights. Our fleet will strike their training center and destroy it before the rebels even know that we are on the march.
Kip joined in with the cheering audience so as not to draw attention to himself.
Now, allow me to present the one person responsible for bringing us all together.
The towering video screen showed a figure emerging, slim and tall, with a mane of hair that looked like copper fire.
Admiral Dalla!
Kip stared in disbelief and horror. Dalla had captured him and Han Solo after they escaped from the spice mines of Kessel, and because she had deemed Kip a worthless prisoner, she had ordered his execution. Kip had thought to destroy her in the Cauldron Nebula using the Sun Crusher to ignite a cluster of hot blue suns. But she had miraculously escaped to attack the Maw installation again. And she had died there. Kip was sure of it.
No. Dalla has to be dead.
People near him turned, and two stormtrooper guards appeared at his side, blasters drawn.
Let me see your work assignment and papers, one of them said.
Kip slid a hand into the pocket of his overalls, ostensibly to remove his work assignment card, and wrapped his fingers around his lightsaber handle. He could feel Dorsk 81 prepare himself as well.
You can all be proud of what you are about to do.
Yes,
Kip thought.
Yes, I am.
He unsheathed the lightsaber and the energy blade sprang out. In a single sweeping arc, he slashed off the stormtrooper's armored hand, taking the blaster pistol with it. He followed through to strike down the second trooper. Dorsk 81's own lightsaber came out ablaze as he struck down the third stormtrooper. The audience around them recoiled in surprise and panic. Even from the distance, Dalla could see the unmistakable glare of lightsabers.
Jedi Knights!
Kill the Jedi Knights!
Stormtroopers clustered around them, firing blaster rifles. Dorsk 81's lightsaber deflected the first bolt high into the ceiling while the second shot burned through the back of a fleeing lieutenant.
Don't fight, Kip shouted. It'll only slow us down. Run!
The size of the crowd worked in their favor, and they disappeared in the confusion of the panicking mob. Kip and Dorsk 81 rocketed off the landing pad with repulsor lifts and sublight engines at full power in a pinwheeling escape. Their tumbling course made them difficult targets for the Imperial ships.
Launch into hyperspace, fast!
Dorsk 81 punched up a readout.
The coordinates for Combe are programmed. We can send an alarm from my homeworld.
Fine, fine.
They vanished into star lines as the Empire scrambled after them.
As their damaged ship limped away from Hoth, Callista and Luke worked side by side, desperately trying to repair each system failure before another one occurred. They plunged headlong into the broken asteroid field at the fringes of the Hoth system, with only minimal shields and virtually no control over their course. The asteroids began to grow thicker around them, battering at the ship.
In a shower of sparks and burned circuits, the life support systems gasped and died. The atmosphere began bleeding away noticeably, and their body heat did little to warm the cabin as the cold of space leached it away. Luke and Callista studied the environment suits the Wumpas had shredded. Using repair kits and other patches, they managed to piece together one of them, but only one. Luke took Callista's hand.
You have to wear it, Callista. I won't let you sacrifice yourself.
I have no intention of it. I can go deep into a Jedi trance, slow down my metabolism, and use the Force to try to contact someone.
Yes,
Callista said, defeated.
We have to try.
She slowly pulled the environment suit over her long legs. Luke's eyes closed as he descended into a deep trance. He centered his thoughts on a tangible shout along the lines of Force that connected everything in the cosmos.
Leia.
Exhausted from the tension of the diplomatic mission to Durga's fortress and the knowledge that Admiral Dalla was still alive and gearing up for another assault against the New Republic, Leia sat in her comfortable seat in the diplomatic shuttle. Han piloted away from Nal Hutta, avoiding the smuggler's moon and arrowing out to open space where Akbar's and Wedge's fleets waited.
Suddenly a thought lanced through Leia. She sat bolt upright and gasped.
Han turned from the pilot's seat, an expression of concern on his face.
Hey, Leia, what is it?
It's Luke.
He's in trouble.
The diplomatic shuttle pulled into the receiving bay of Wedge's escort frigate Yavaris. Chewbacca was waiting for Han and Leia, having returned with R2-D2 on the Millennium Falcon after their trip to the smuggler's moon. In the war room, a coded transmission brought up a holographic simulacrum of Admiral Akbar. Leia told everyone what she had found out about Dalla, and Chewbacca gave his report. Leia glanced from Wedge's square-jawed face to Akbar's glassy, unreadable Calamarian eyes.
I want all of our teams on yellow alert from this moment on.
The only advantage we have is they don't know we know what they're up to. Wait for your report from General Medine's mission and act accordingly if I haven't returned.
I trust you all. Now, I have to go save my brother.
Leia sat strapped into her seat, still concentrating. She had followed Luke's thoughts, his gradually fading request for assistance. Her Force abilities had been sharpened through Luke's training, and though she couldn't give Han coordinates, she could take him in the right general direction. As they closed in on Luke's ship, she was able to find its precise location. With the Vulcan's tractor beam, they took the ruined yacht in tow and brought their airlocks together so that Han, Leia, and Chewie could breach the outer hatch of Luke's ship and enter the darkened wreck. They found the two motionless bodies in the back chamber. Luke squatted on the floor like a statue, and Callista clung to him in a tattered and failing life support suit. Luke looked frozen solid. His skin had a colorless, flat texture like wax. Callista gave a rattling groan, shifting in her slick suit. Powdery frost crumbled from her joints.
"Let's get them into the Falcon," Han said. "Chewie, carry Luke. Leia and I will get Callista."
Callista revived first. With a change into warm clothing and generous cups of stim tea, she recovered enough to insist on helping nurse Luke back to health. In his deep trance, he had depleted his reserves, keeping himself at the edge of death when the life support had ceased to function. Callista's gray eyes were red-rimmed as she took a polysponge soaked in warm water and bathed Luke's face, his forehead, his neck. She whispered to Leia,
"I had to watch him as my own supplies dwindled. As he dwindled,"
she shuddered.
"I held him, but I couldn't touch him. I told him so many things."
She reached out with her fingertip, gently caressing Luke's cheek. Suddenly his blue eyes snapped open, and he took a deep breath.
"You're safe now, Luke,"
Leia said.
"We'll take you back to the Jedi Academy, where you can relax and recover."
New Republic Admiral Crix Medine and his commander, Trandia, locked down their A-Wing fighters on the rocky surface of the small asteroid in the Hoth asteroid belt. Medine had successfully tracked Durga to the huge construction project. Medine and Trandia wore spacesuits like self-contained mobile ships. Standing on the surface of the asteroid, they checked their complement of detonators, life support packs, and surveillance systems, then leapt upward, tearing free of the asteroid's negligible gravity. Momentum carried them across the gulf of space toward the superweapon under construction. As he and Trandia drifted like tiny pieces of rubble toward the giant cylindrical assembly, Medine had a good deal of time to stare at the Hutt project through his faceplate. The design concerned him. He was aware that the Hutts had copied the Death Star plans from the Imperial Information Center, but this was no Death Star. It appeared instead to be no more than the super laser, a straight cylinder that would serve as a destructive offensive weapon. If this weapon were completed, the Hutts would use it against any system that failed to pay them for protection. And the construction seemed nearly finished. The two suited figures floated in specks against the kilometers-long assembly. Medine spoke in a focused line-of-sight beam at Trandia. We may be able to cripple the weapon if we can get inside and place our detonators in appropriate spots. From the looks of it, we'd better not wait too long. The Hutts are ready to go. Their magnetic boots made contact with the armor plates, and they clambered like insects along the hull. Medine was surprised to see that many of the hull segments were mismatched and loose, welded together but leaving gaps and uneven seams. He was appalled by the reprehensible workmanship. At least it would be easy to get inside. They entered a darkened and half-completed corridor. Finally, they reached a bulkhead door that allowed them to pass deeper inside the construction. The engine sections were a great pulsing dungeon filled with smells of oil and coolant, hissing steam that might have been intentionally vented or just leaking from reactor cores. Guards patrolled the catwalks above, boar-like Gamorreans and a hodgepodge of alien creatures. Medine checked the blaster pistol and the four detonators he carried, then gestured that he and Trandia should split up. Trandia darted from cover to scant cover, working her way over to the shielding wall that blocked the engines. Medine moved to the mesh surrounding the propulsion computers. He took a cutting tool from his equipment pouch. If he could slice through the protective fence, he could plant detonators that would destroy the computers driving the superweapon. The alarm came on as soon as he severed the crystalline cords, and the guards scrambled to discover the nature of the disturbance. Suddenly, Trandia stood up from her hiding place near the wall of the engine compartment. She waved her arms and yelled to draw attention to herself. Run! She shouted at Medine. The guards pushed toward her position, and as they reached her, Trandia triggered every one of the detonators she carried. The explosion took out the entire complement of guards as well as Trandia herself, while it barely damaged the engine's containment wall. Lights flickered and went out. The shockwave knocked Medine flat. He shook his head, gasping for breath, and struggled to his feet. The mission was paramount. They had to succeed. He lurched down the dimly lit corridor and stumbled right into another group of alien guards. Nadine's heart sank. Trandia had given her life, hoping to cause irreparable damage, hoping to let her commander escape. But she had accomplished neither. The guards hauled him off to Durga the Hutt. It was the middle of the night shift on the escort frigate Yavaris, and General Wedge Antilles sat quietly in the command chair, relaxed but watchful. The tension was thick. The yellow alert status had been uninterrupted for a day. They had heard nothing, no word of an Imperial strike, no report from Crix Medine, and it was beginning to wear on them. Kwee-Zoox crept up behind Wedge and squeezed his shoulders with her long, pale blue fingers. He looked into her deep indigo eyes. "Couldn't sleep either?" he asked. She shook her head, and her feathery, pearlescent hair flickered.
"The waiting is so hard," she said.
Kwee-Zoox had been brainwashed as a child to become a weapons designer for the Empire. In Maw installation, she had helped design the original Death Star with Bevel Lemelisk, and she had developed the Sun Crusher by herself. She remembered little of that, however, because young Kip Duran, flooded with dark side powers, had erased much of her memory in a disastrous attempt to make it impossible for anyone to recreate such weapons. Despite her many ordeals, Kwee
Now the New Republic's mission scientist retained a childlike sense of wonder at discovering new things. Wedge loved her more and more each day that he spent at her side.
Wedge nodded. Much as I hate war, at times like this, I almost wish something would just happen.
And it did. Crix Medine's distress signal came in at emergency priority on the transmitter. Wedge knew that General Medine would send the signal only in the most extreme circumstances.
We've got to go pull him out.
The comm activated. A message was coming in from Admiral Akbar on the Mon Calamari Star Cruiser.
This may be the beginning of the overall attack.
Yes, Admiral. Shall we deploy the fleet? We can home in on Medine's distress and get there at top speed. We don't...
Before Wedge could finish, another broad-spectrum message came in on the comm.
This is Kip Duran with an urgent message to the New Republic military.
Wedge flinched. Beside him, Kui held her composure, but he noticed her stiffen. Kui claimed to have forgiven Kip, but the overeager Jedi Knight still unnerved both of them.
A massive Imperial strike force is ready to launch in the next day or so. Admiral Dalla is commanding this fleet. Their main target is said to be Yavin 4. We request any assistance possible.
So, it's a two-pronged attack. I will take the Galactic Voyager and head to Yavin 4. You go and rescue General Medine.
Understood, Admiral,
Wedge said. Dorsgeti 1 and Kip Duran landed their Imperial shuttle on Yavin 4 and rushed through narrow jungle paths to the tall Masasi ruin near the river, where the Jedi trainees worked together, nearly 30 in all. Kirana T, the warrior woman from Dathomir, and the older, somewhat confused hermit from Bespin, Streen, worked to haul fallen rocks from a portion of the temple that had collapsed. They used Jedi powers to lift broken slabs out of the way. Kam Solyusar, the hard-bitten Jedi veteran, sternly watched the activities, directing the work of lesser-trained Jedi students who had arrived at the Praxium in the last year. The silvery-haired Jedi scholar Tian spotted Kip and Dorsgeti 1 first.
Kip! Dorsgeti 1, you've returned to us. Good. We could use some help.
Where's Master Skywalker? Kip said.
He and Callista left more than a week ago. The Jedi Academy is in great danger, Dorsgeti 1 blurted out. Admiral Dalla has assembled a new Imperial fleet, and Yavin 4 is their target. The Star Destroyers could be here any moment.
No,
Streen shook his head as he gazed up into the pale blue sky.
No, they're already here.
A shower of bright lines danced through the upper atmosphere toward the jungles. TIE fighters swooped overhead as the Jedi trainees scrambled for shelter. Laser cannons shot from the Imperial ship, setting tall trees alight and blasting the old temple to rubble. The warrior woman Kirana T stood out in the open near the piles of rubble the Jedi trainees had so meticulously removed from the ruins. The TIE fighters saw her and fired, but she gestured with her hand. Using the Force as a sling, she snatched one of the squarish boulders cut by Masasi's slaves thousands of years before, and hurled it with all her Jedi strength. The boulder flew through the air and smashed one of the TIE fighters' flat power arrays. It careened to one side and the ship exploded in the trees. Kam Solyusar stood on the other side of the clearing, and using the Force, he too began hurling boulders at the remaining two TIE fighters. All the Jedi trainees had the idea now, and an avalanche of boulders hammered the two ships out of the sky. Both exploded in mid-flight to the cheers of the embattled Jedi students. As the second wave of four TIE fighters came immediately after, Streen did not pick up boulders or other weapons with the Force. He used the air itself, moving molecules in the atmosphere to summon storm currents that achieved hurricane strength. The air currents buffeted the TIE fighters right and left, forcing the pilots to concentrate on flying and keeping them from shooting. A pair of TIE bombers came in low from behind. Kip shouted a warning. The first bomber cruised over the temple and let three concussion missiles fall out of its bombing bay. But Kip pushed upward with the Force, visualizing the three dropped missiles. He nudged the explosives back up into the bomber's bay, where they detonated.
The second TIE fighter dropped a single missile, then seeing the fate of his partner, shot off at top speed. The missile detonated, sending a rumble that shook the temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster.
This old structure won't last much longer,
Kip shouted.
We've got to get back to the Great Temple. That's more defensible.
As they reached the giant pyramid that had once been fortified as a rebel base, Dorsgate 1 saw that their desperate defense at the temple had served a secondary purpose, a diversion for the Imperial forces, who now thought the Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster was the Jedi stronghold. The TIE fighters and bombers concentrated their forces there. Despite the fear that rattled through him, Dorsgate 1 felt an exhilaration and a camaraderie with the other Jedi. He was fighting for something meaningful. For most of his life as a clone, he had never felt he had a choice in his destiny. Now he had made one. To be a Jedi Knight. Deep in the war room on the second level of the pyramid, the Jedi Knights gathered as they heard the echoing thuds of the constant attack. Tian shook her silvery head.
They have a communications jamming net in place.
Kip Duran paced the enclosed room.
The Star Destroyers are actually the greatest threat. Tian, were you able to determine how many ships there are in orbit? 17, I believe. Imperial class. I have a suggestion, Dorsgate 1 swallowed. We cannot succeed if we fight small battles individually, but together we are more powerful than the sum of our parts. We can use the Force to move the Star Destroyers away.
The collective gasp among the trainees was a mixture of disbelief and delight.
It's too much, Kamsul Yasar said. There are too many.
Dorsgate 1 was not flustered.
Size matters not. How many times has Master Skywalker told us that? At first, we didn't believe we could lift a pebble or a leaf.
At the apex of the pyramid, Dorsgate 1 stood barefoot on the sun-warm flagstones of the observation deck. The Imperials had figured out that the Jedi Knights were no longer at the Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster, and now that the trainees had gathered on the tallest temple, Pelion's attackers would soon direct their strike there. Dorsgate 1 tilted his smooth face up to the sky and held his hands at his sides, fingers spread. He calmed himself, reaching within him for threads that he could spin together with the others. All the other Jedi trainees also focused their abilities. He reached upward with his hands, picturing the Star Destroyers in orbit. He found them, touched them with his mind. They were huge, greater in mass than he had imagined. But he used the Force to push. But the ships proved immovable, too large. He pushed again, straining harder. The Star Destroyers moved slightly, bucking and resisting. But it was still not enough. Dorsgate 1 exerted his mind to the breaking point. He reached all the way into the depths of the Force that the 30 gathered Jedi Knights had opened for him.
Move!
He shouted. The word itself was like white-hot energy flaming out of his mouth, from his fingertips, surging through his body and burning, burning. The inside of his head went bright like a star going supernova, and his consciousness rode along with the tidal wave of Force. He felt it strike the 17 Star Destroyers, and they slammed backwards like twigs in a tornado. The shockwave flung the entire fleet far out beyond the fringes of the Yavin system. Pelion's fleet of Star Destroyers went away. And Dorsgate 1 went with them, but to a different, unknown destination.
Dorsgate 1,
Kip said, looking down in horror at his friend, whose skin was sizzling as if the tissues had been brought to a boil.
Wait, wait, we'll find a healer.
But Dorsgate 1 was already dead in his arms. In the second wave of the assault on the Jedi stronghold, Admiral Dalla's Black Nighthammer arrived, an opaque wedge 8 kilometers long, silhouetted like a knife blade against the pale orange sphere of Yavin.
She had expected to find Pelion virtually finished with his attack so she could lord over the mopping-up operations and watch the final destruction of the Jedi Knights. But as the Knight Hammer sliced through space, she saw no sign of Pelion's fleet and felt her enthusiasm crumble.
"Where is he?" Dalla demanded. "Open a channel. Find Pelion."
"He was here, Admiral," the tactical officer said. "The jammer satellite net is in place. Ground assault troops have been deployed. But the Star Destroyers are no longer here."
"Recall all TIE pilots and TIE bombers. Have them return to full alert, back in their crew quarters. I won't be launching their ships just yet."
She wanted to waste no time.
"Do we have plans for an attack, Admiral?" the weapons chief said from his station.
"Yes. We strike from orbit. All turbo laser batteries, full strength. Fire at will, down into the jungle."
As lances of brilliant energy shot down to the placid surface of the small moon below, Dalla slammed her gloved fist into the bridge rail with each shot as if she could add to the destructive potential of the blast.
General Crix Medine stood bravely, staring into the large eyes of Durga the Hutt. He said nothing for a moment as he thought back on his years of service to the New Republic. He had had a good run, had helped the New Republic grow strong, and now he had followed his duty to the end. He decided not to give Durga the satisfaction of begging for his life, and Durga didn't give him the opportunity. The Hutt pointed the blaster he had grabbed from General Sulemar at Medine and fiddled with the controls until he figured out how to set the weapon to kill.
"Any last words?" Durga said.
Medine lifted his bearded chin. "Not to you." Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the white light flicker of approaching ships. His heart swelled. They were coming to rescue him. The Hutt shrugged, rippling his fleshy shoulders.
"All right."
The guards who had brought Medine before the Hutt scattered out of the way. Medine was thrown backward into the metal wall as the killing beam burned through to his heart. The Millennium Falcon shot out of hyperspace bound for Yavin 4, loudly broadcasting identification beacons and transmitting an announcement that Luke Skywalker had come home. They plunged toward the jewel-green moon around the orange gas giant and nearly rammed into the Superstar Destroyer Nighthammer.
"Whoa!"
Han cried. Chewbacca grabbed the control, sending the Falcon spinning up and around, past the kilometers-long Superstar Destroyer.
"What the..."
The Nighthammer continued to fire upon the jungle moon, but as soon as Han arrived, a few stray turbolaser blasts sliced across space toward them.
"Chewie, take evasive."
The Wookiee was already one step ahead of him.
"This is Admiral Dalla, commander of the Nighthammer. You will surrender immediately or be destroyed."
Han toggled the comm.
"Dalla, you are such a pain."
Then he snapped it off. Dodging another burst of turbo laser bolts by flying in a figure eight past the Star Destroyer's targeting locks.
"Han, stop showing off," Leia said.
A cloud of TIE fighters spilled out of the forward hangar decks of the Superstar Destroyer, swirling toward the Falcon.
"Shields up!"
Han turned back to Luke.
"Boy, go away for a week or so and look what happens."
Two TIE fighters flew toward him, their laser cannon shots ricocheting off the full-power shields in front of the Falcon. Han punched his own laser cannons, clipped one of the TIE fighters, and sent it reeling out of control. The other screamed by without damage.
"Go to the gunwale." "I'll take it," Luke responded.
"I'll get in the other one," Leia said.
Luke climbed into the gunning seat and shouted to Han,
"Dalla's got more ships than we can handle. Don't stick around to fight them. Just get down to the moon."
Luke fired the laser cannons, and from below, Leia shot and hit another TIE fighter. The Millennium Falcon soared beneath the immense Nighthammer. A flurry of TIE fighters blocked their way, flying in tight formation as they shot a constant pattern of blasts. Han streaked toward them at full speed.
I see him. They'll move.
The Falcon's forward shields began to weaken, but Han plunged onward.
Luke and Leia continue shooting, taking out TIE fighters.
Please get out of the way, Han muttered.
At the last possible moment, the TIE fighters scrambled in such a pell-mell frenzy that two crashed into each other while the others spun out of control. The Falcon shot through the defensive formation and grazed the atmosphere of the jungle moon, diving toward the treetops. We've got to land and see if the trainees are okay, Luke said. We can fight beside them.
Han looked around. Well, maybe we can get them all aboard the Falcon and take them to safety.
Luke had a grim expression on his face. No insult to your piloting skills, Han, but if we evacuated the Jedi trainees on the Falcon, one lucky strike from Admiral Dalla's Star Destroyer would take out every last Jedi Knight in the New Republic. I can't risk that. We'll fight here. You can take off, go back and get help, or stay and fight against some of the ground battles. But the Jedi aren't leaving here. Han set the Falcon down beside an Imperial shuttle in front of the Great Temple. Forest fires raged nearby. Luke and Callista hurried toward the temple. The heavy, horizontal hangar door ground upward, and Kip Duran plodded out into the sunlight, bearing in his arms the limp, blackened body of Dorskitty One. Kip told them about Dorskitty One's heroic action. Callista looked at him. We have no time to grieve now, she said gently.
He was a Jedi, Kip said. A Jedi Knight. And so are you all, Luke said. Come on, we must defend the Academy to the best of our ability.
In the jungle, they heard more explosion, crashing noises, humming machinery as ground assault vehicles converged on their main target. Han gestured to Leia and Chewbacca.
Back to the Falcon. We'll break out our weapons.
He turned to Kip.
Come on, Kip. We're going to need you.
The Imperials will be here in a moment, Luke said to the Jedi trainees gathered in front of the Great Temple. If we can spread out in the jungle, we can hit them with guerrilla attacks.
We're Jedi Knights, Kamsul Yusar added. They're just Imperials.
Luke smiled at his confidence. Callista, maybe you should go with Han and Leia on the Falcon, where you'll be safer. She shook her head vigorously. Not on your life, I'm staying here with you. He smiled at her.
All right. I'll protect you with my Jedi powers. Just stay close.
The Jedi Knights fought on, as they had before Luke's arrival, using the Force to strike back at the Imperials. As Kip ran to join Han, who had already reached the Millennium Falcon, Callista followed Luke and Tian, who slipped behind the Great Temple into the thicker jungle, where more Imperials were massing. Callista felt anger and helplessness crippling her again. Luke had meant well when he said he would protect her, but unconsciously he had flaunted the fact that he had Jedi powers and implied that she was helpless without them. She didn't want him to protect her. She wanted to do her own part. A huge piece of heavy assault machinery plowed its way through the jungle toward the temple. Luke gestured for them to follow, but Callista hung behind. He and Tian would work together, linking Jedi powers in a way that she could no longer share. Callista came to the dreaded realization that perhaps she had been unable to regain her powers because she was too close to Luke. He intimidated her with his own abilities, unconsciously emphasizing the fact that she had so little left. She and Luke were bonded, heart and spirit. But perhaps she needed to find her own strength again so that she could join his. The Imperial Flying Fortress approached Luke and Tian. It hovered over an ancient deadfall where several giant Masasi trees had toppled during a storm. Luke recognized the immense vehicle. It was like an Imperial AT-AT walker, but without the legs, merely the armored body loaded with heavy weaponry. It cruised forward, heavy blaster cannons moving like rigid tentacles. Luke whispered to Tian, "Together, see that sharp tree stump? When the fortress flies over..." Tian nodded, and they waited as the low hum of repulsor that drove the flying fortress over the ancient deadfall. Luke focused on the sharpened trunk. Now! Together they tugged the dead tree with the force, snapping the vines that coiled around it and heaving the massive trunk like an axe blade, crushing the flying fortress into an unrecognizable mass of smoldering armor plate. Luke and Tian leapt from their hiding place and clasped each other's hands in triumph. See, Callista? We'll take care of them one by one. But when he turned to look behind him, he saw no sign of her. Callista had vanished into the thick jungle.
Quizooks leaned forward and pointed just as Wedge began to discern the organized cluster of lights ahead of them. In the view screen, they saw the long cylindrical construction amid islands of hardened slag and discarded spare components. The hot weapon appeared to be complete and ready to move. Trailed by their three Corellian corvettes, the Yavaris and the Dodona approached the enormous dark saber.
"They actually built it," Kui whispered. "I hope we're not too late."
So, it was all true, and the huts got this far without us detecting them.
Wedge nodded grimly to the helmsman.
But they won't get any farther.
Without ceremony, Durga's guards dragged Crix Medine's dead body off the Darksaber's command deck. Sitting imperiously on his levitating platform, Durga the Hutt issued commands to General Sulamar.
Power up our engines. You will pilot us out of here. Now, my Darksaber is finished. Let us begin our sweep across the galaxy and begin collecting our due.
Upon hearing Durga's words, Bevel Lemelisk, who had been watching with interest as Durga dealt with Crix Medine, snapped out of his reverie.
You're not actually going to use this weapon. It's not yet tested. We need to verify all the subsystems and...
Nonsense, Chief Engineer. Your job is nearly finished. Don't try to prolong your usefulness. My Toril workers followed your own plans exactly. What could go wrong?
He gestured to Sulamar.
Go on, I told you. Move out.
Lemelisk gradually backed toward the turbolift door as the bridge crew busied themselves preparing the superweapon for its maiden flight. He slipped into the turbolift and the elevator platform dropped rapidly down. In his private inspection bay, Lemelisk strutted over to the scooter he had used to watch the final construction of the great weapon and climbed into the hatch. He strapped in and powered up the scooter, drifted through the atmosphere containment field and away from the enormous weapon. Bevel Lemelisk would take his chances out in open space.
Battle stations!
Wedge Antilles cried. The Hutt weapon is moving out, the tactical officer said, stating the obvious as the cylindrical behemoth powered up its rear engines like a star exploding.
We won't let it escape.
Bad news, sir, the sensor chief said. We've lost the signal from General Medine's transmitter.
Wedge slumped in his seat.
Oh, no. If the transmitter is stopped, that means...
He sat up straight and gestured violently forward.
All weapons on full. We must not let them get away. The Yavaris and the Dodona will dive in directly. Corellian corvettes will target the weapon's main engines to slow it down. This time, the Hutts picked the wrong people to tangle with.
On the Darksaber's command deck, the Deveronian sensor chief squawked in alarm.
Lord Durga! Rebel fleet approaching! They're powering up weapons!
What?
Durga recoiled, blinking his lantern-like eyes.
They must have followed the rebel spy!
He turned to Sulamar.
Power up the superlaser! We'll blast the rebel fleet into space dust!
The rebel fleet came in as the Darksaber plowed ahead into the flying rubble of the asteroid belt, firing with all their weapons. The hundreds of turbolaser blasts struck home, peeling plates off the Darksaber's hull, rattling components loose. A series of unnerving noises grew louder deep within the engine core. Sulamar continued flying with grave trepidation. Durga would take out any mistakes on his hide. Up ahead, a pair of the largest rocks Durga had yet seen ground together, spinning about like granite jaws waiting for new prey. Durga raised his hand.
Get those asteroids out of our way! Fire the superlaser!
Sulamar punched down and covered his eyes to block the blinding glare of the deadly energy beam.
Firing now, sir!
But there was no scream of destruction and pulse of power through the superweapon. A fizzle of sparks splattered out the front end of the Darksaber, but nothing more.
Oh, no!
Sulamar punched the button again and again, but the Darksaber refused to fire. The two broken planetoids smashed together with the hot super weapon between them. The Darksaber was crushed in an instant, becoming yet another hunk of space debris that would float forever in the Hoth asteroid field.
Callista!
Luke called again, but she plunged on through the underbrush, not looking back. Up ahead in a flattened section of trees, broken branches, and plowed up dirt, she spotted the crashed TIE bomber. Its pilot was working frantically. With a toolkit from the bomber's cockpit, he had straightened the exhaust crimp and test-fired the engines, moving silently with a smoothness born not from the Force, but her own training. Callista eased out of the thorny undergrowth and sprinted toward the TIE pilot. The pilot must have seen some flicker of motion, for he reacted with blinding speed, snatching a blaster from the holster at his side. Callista kept moving, picking up momentum as she held out her lightsaber and punched the power button. In a smooth stroke, she lopped off the pilot's black-gloved hand. Before he could cry out in pain, Callista struck sideways across his chest. She hauled herself up to the hatch and dropped into the cramped cockpit.
Callista! Callista!
Like a ghost, Luke's voice echoed through the trees, but she forced herself not to hear it. The dark ship rose slowly. Then the twin ion engines kicked in with a bone-chilling roar, and the TIE bomber curved up to where the atmosphere thinned toward the Nighthammer.
I'm sorry.
And Callista continued on course. Callista headed toward the Nighthammer with all the speed she could muster. A female voice came over the comm channel, a battle director requesting her identification and status. Callista disguised her lack of either by creating static with the controls.
This is TIE Bomber number... All of our Star Destroyers are gone. The Jedi Knight did something and the entire fleet... Wiped out.
State the extent of your damage.
Engine's failing. I think I'm leaking coolant or radiation. Can't be sure. Suggest you find an isolated bay where I can land. Evacuate it and feel down just in case something goes wrong. I'll check the leakage and report.
Acknowledged, TIE Bomber.
Callista continued drifting toward the Superstar Destroyer as the battle director gave her instructions on where to land. The Falcon roared away from the Great Temple, its white-hot sublight engines rippling across the sky. Han followed the lines of fire through the tree canopy below and saw scout walkers plodding through the thick trees, rolling ground assault vehicles, juggernauts, and flying fortresses. In the gunwales, Kip and Leia shot repeatedly, but they had a difficult time targeting through the mesh of branches.
Company from above! Leia shouted.
I see him, Kip said.
Both gunwales began firing. A squadron of TIE fighters soared overhead, either the remnants of Kalian's forces or a new wing deployed by Dala's Nighthammer.
These targets are more to my liking,
Han said, charging straight at the oncoming fleet. Chewbacca groaned in distress, and 3PO covered his optical sensors with his golden hands. But again, the bluffing trick worked, and the TIE fighters scrambled out of the way, firing crazily as they split apart. A river of fire seared through the atmosphere, ripping the air apart. The turbo laser bolt from orbit struck one of the TIE fighters, and it disintegrated. The shockwave buffeted the Falcon, making Han and Chewbacca scramble to regain control of the ship. The remaining TIE fighters were sent spinning. Another turbo laser bolt came down in the distance, igniting a portion of the jungle kilometers away. Han shook his head in disgust.
That's Dala.
Doesn't even know what she's firing at. Kip lowered himself in the gunwale, and the look of twisted determination on his face made Han shudder. Dorsk 81 sacrificed himself to get rid of the first Imperial fleet. We would all be safe now if not for Dala. She's the target I want to go after. 3PO stood up, indignant.
That would be a highly irrational course of action. The Millennium Falcon is no match for that superstar destroyer.
You're crazy, kid,
Han said uncertainly.
Kip shrugged. Just determined, and it's worked to my advantage before.
Chewbacca growled his reservations, but Kip squatted beside Han.
Before I came to Yavin 4, Dorsk 81 and I sent an alarm to the New Republic fleet. Reinforcements should be on their way. I don't know how long they'll take, but we can't let Dala destroy everything before they get here.
Han thought of how Admiral Dala had strapped him in the torture chair of her Star Destroyer Gorgon.
Whatever you say, kid. Let's throw all our cards on the table and hope Dala doesn't see that we're bluffing.
The Falcon peeled through the outer skin of atmosphere and headed into the blackness of space. Above them, the Night Hammer lorded over the tiny jungle moon, a dark city in space, loaded with deadly weapons.
Punch it, Chewie!
The Falcon soared forward, heading directly toward the Night Hammer. Han keyed the comm.
Hello, Admiral Dala.
This is Han Solo, and I'm with my friend Kip Durant. Remember us?
The Night Hammer stopped blasting the jungle moon and targeted the Falcon instead.
Let's get out of here, Chewie.
Han slammed back into his seat as acceleration hurled them away from the Night Hammer.
That was real smart, Leia said.
Well, at least she stopped shooting at the Jedi Academy for a few minutes.
The forward bay doors opened on the Superstar Destroyer. And four squadrons of TIE fighters launched after the Millennium Falcon, firing repeatedly. The Falcon rocked and lurched. Han looked uneasily at their power levels, and though the Falcon fled at top speed, their shields were weakening drastically. An unexpected volley of fire came from the side, blasting through the swarm of TIE fighters and sending them into confusion. Kip smiled.
It's our reinforcements!
Admiral Akbar's Galactic Voyager plunged into the system, flanked by four Corellian gunships. The Calamarian Star Cruiser stabbed through the clustered TIE fighters, wiping out half of them in its first pass. A few desperate stragglers fled back toward the Night Hammer, with twin ion engines coaxed to maximum power.
General Solo, is that you? You look as if you could use a bit of help.
It was Akbar. The Falcon was welcomed into the protected landing bay of Akbar's Star Cruiser just as Dala opened fire on the Calamarian battleship. The four Corellian gunships continued to sweep space clean of TIE fighters, but the Night Hammer still outgunned their combined force.
The remainder of the New Republic fleet is coming to join us,
Akbar said as Han, Leia, Chewbacca, and Kip stepped onto the bridge of the Galactic Voyager. As the Calamarian starship and the four Corellian gunships wheeled about, increasing their distance from the Night Hammer, a wall of turbolaser fire appeared off to starboard. Akbar's shields were damaged. And one of the four Corellian gunships, taken completely by surprise, exploded beneath the Galactic Voyager. The reinforcements had arrived. Admiral Dala's reinforcements.
Keep firing,
Akbar shouted.
Status report.
One of the Calamarian tactical officers reported.
Three Victory-class ships destroyed, Admiral, but we only have one of our Corellian gunships remaining.
The Victory-class fleet fired and fired upon the Galactic Voyager, and Admiral Dala's Night Hammer shot at them with even greater power from the opposite side. On the bridge, Han gripped Leia's hand. They stared out at the overwhelming tide of battle. Akbar continued to hold his command together, while Kip Duran leaned forward, his eyes full of unfocused determination.
Shields failing, Admiral. Approximately 10 seconds remaining.
Admiral Akbar's ship sat practically defenseless, without shields, in the midst of the deadly enemy fleet. Vice Admiral Pelion had no idea what had happened to him.
One moment, he and his 17 star destroyers were in orbit around the jungle moon of Yavin, engaged in their carefully planned assault, encountering resistance, but nothing they couldn't obliterate with another sortie or two. And then they found themselves hurled across space. Pelion coughed and wiped blood from the corner of his mouth. His crew grumbled and glanced at each other in perplexity. Pelion clutched the bridge rail, forcing himself not to slump with dismay.
Check the status of all our remaining star destroyers. I want full repairs on our hyperdrives as soon as possible. For now, proceed back to the Yavin system at full sublight power.
But, sir, that'll take weeks, the helmsman said.
Pelion looked at him, cold and calm.
In the meantime, we'll calculate micro-jumps, by hand if necessary, even without the navicomputer. We must get back to Yavin 4.
The Nighthammer's fully loaded TIE bomber bay was like a trap waiting to be sprung. And as Callista landed her hijacked damaged ship among the other bombers, she vowed to trigger all the destructive energy just waiting here for her. All the pilots had been evacuated because of her warning of a leaking engine core, but investigators would come soon. She had to hurry. She code-locked the bay's access door from the outer corridors to ensure her privacy. Then she sprinted back to her damaged TIE bomber and opened the armament reserves. Callista pointed the leftover missiles from the TIE bomber directly toward the armored wall at the far end of the bay. She set the missiles' timers for automatic launch. Then she raced to the next TIE bomber and opened up its launcher, fiddling with the full rack of concussion missiles. Callista raced from bomber to bomber, setting each store of missiles on target, diverting a few to strike the fuel tanks of other bombers in the bay. With all the charges set, Callista locked the access door behind her and raced along the corridor, finding an empty transport tube that shot her along the inner hull, away from where the deadly explosions would occur. She knew she had no hope for her own escape. She accepted that. But she wanted to face Admiral Dalla, look in her eyes, and strike the Admiral down with her own two hands. Admiral Dalla watched the last of the battle unfold toward its inevitable conclusion, and she stood back and smiled. According to her readings, the rebel defenses had practically been exhausted, shields failing. A dark-haired young lieutenant rushed up to her.
Admiral, good news from the sensor station. We've located Vice Admiral Pelion's fleet.
Where?
They're on the edge of the Yavin system, Admiral, making their way here as fast as they can. We've established communication.
What happened to them? Did they suffer engine problems all at once?
The lieutenant shook his head.
No, Admiral, it's very strange. The Jedi Knights physically hurled them out of the system with their sorcery.
At that moment, the rear portion of the Superstar Destroyer exploded, tearing out all the Nighthammer's engine systems. As the first wave of explosions reached the containment wall, other timers went off and more missiles flew, erupting through the blast craters or streaking sideways to detonate the fuel tanks of other TIE bombers, which in turn blew up in an enormous expanding concussion. The bridge tower shuddered with the blow. Power went out, leaving the command station bathed in red emergency lights. Dalla was thrown to the floor.
What was that? Status report! I want power back on now!
The lieutenant hauled himself up to a station and punched up a summary in the bloody glow of emergency lights. He looked stricken with horror.
Admiral, there have been massive explosions in the engine compartments. We're on fire. Life support has failed. Toxic and radioactive waste pouring into the habitable decks. Our rear bomber bays are all ruined.
How could this happen?
Several of the Victory-class Star Destroyers broke off their pursuit of Akbar's ship. The comm system squawked.
Nighthammer! Nighthammer, please respond. Your ship is in flames.
As five of the Victory Star Destroyers continued to pursue the rebels, firing recklessly, the rest of the New Republic fleet suddenly appeared in front of them. Scores of assault frigates, Corellian corvettes, five more Mon Calamari Star Cruisers, Lorinar Strike Cruisers, Carrick-class gunships, an overwhelming force. Dalla thought fast. She had to be realistic, not allow her fury and outrage to muddy her thoughts. She had to think of the future of the Empire, not her personal vendetta. Revenge would come later.
She still had Pelion's fleet. She still had numerous Victory-class ships. More and more great battle cruisers were being built in the Imperial shipyard. This was merely a setback. Her only chance was to escape and reach Pelion. She sounded her own alarm and bellowed into the intercom systems.
This is Admiral Dalla. I am ordering an immediate evacuation of this Superstar Destroyer. All personnel, abandon ship. There are Victory-class Star Destroyers here to pick us up, and Vice Admiral Pelion's fleet is on its way. But this ship is going down.
The crew gave their commander one last look, then fled into the corridors to the evacuation pods.
Abandon ship!
Dalla stood alone at her command station, like a captain dutifully about to go down with her ship. But she had no intention of letting it end there. Dalla went to her spacious ready room and its private compartments that held escape pods keyed to command-level personnel only. She stopped when she saw a lone person waiting for her. A woman. A Jedi Knight, holding up a lightsaber blade.
I've been waiting for you, Admiral Dalla, Callista said.
Dalla's face contorted in fury.
I don't believe this. Jedi vermin everywhere I turn.
She stalked forward.
You can't stop me.
Callista stood her ground in front of the access hatches to the escape pods. I need only delay you. That will be enough. All that mattered to Callista was that she stopped Dalla from escaping and wreaking more destruction on the New Republic. If she confronted the shadowy temptation, Callista could use the Force again, the dark side of it, the easy abilities, the strength that grew stronger because of itself, not because of any innate qualities within its wielder. Admiral Dalla whipped out a blaster pistol from its holster at her hip. Callista needed the Force to avoid the deadly bolt. With no choice, she let herself go. In a fraction of a second, using the lightsaber as an extension of herself, Callista struck defensively. Dalla shot four times, but in each instance, Callista let the Force flow through her, allowing the dark side to guide her actions. Flaring with anger, she struck right and left, deflecting Dalla's beams.
The Force is more powerful than you are, Dalla.
Callista felt the frightening strength surging within her, growing more and more powerful. She tried to back away from the dark side, to free herself before its grip became too strong. Dalla ceased firing, but only for an instant, as she switched the setting to stun. This time, the beam was not a discrete bolt of power, but outspreading arcs of blue energy. Callista raised the lightsaber to deflect the stun blast, but the paralyzing energy rippled around her and hammered her to the floor. Her lightsaber short-circuited, flashed out, and Callista crumpled into blackness. The jungle battles continued to rage, but the Imperial ground assault vehicles began to lose their momentum as the Jedi Knights formed a brutal guerrilla defense, destroying scout walkers, juggernauts, and flying fortresses. Most of the TIE fighters and bombers had been knocked out of the sky by force-hurled projectiles.
Callista,
Luke whispered longingly, knowing she could not hear him. But then he looked up into the sky, and suddenly he felt her through the Force, like a door opening to let in a ray of light. His gaze fixed on the black silhouette of the doomed Superstar Destroyer. It was in flames, plunging into the gas giant Yavin. A few straggler life pods sprayed out in all directions as the crew evacuated. And Luke knew, with a clawing dread, that Callista somehow had gone up there.
No! Callista, no!
With a final series of explosions that ignited the clouds, the Night Hammer vanished into Yavin, swallowed up forever. And taking Callista with it. Shortly after the destruction of the Nighthammer, most of the Victory-class Star Destroyers fled back to their rendezvous in the core systems. Pelion's fleet waited, a distant threat, but able to do nothing.
We've detected one more escape pod, Vice Admiral, the sensor chief said.
Pelion's heart leapt.
Haul it into our forward bay. I'm going down to meet it.
Before Pelion could open the hatch, though, The command-level pod popped open, and Admiral Dalla climbed out.
Her face was smeared with soot. Her olive-gray uniform had been torn and stained. Blood smeared one cheek. Pelion's knees nearly buckled with relief. Dalla would know what to do. She could give orders to straighten out the Imperial fleet. She stood up slowly.
Vice Admiral Pelion, in light of this disaster, I hereby resign my rank and hand over command of the Imperial forces to you.
She waited rigidly at attention, and Pelion returned her salute. X-wing fighters dumped clouds of plasma in a diffuse banner high in the Coruscant twilight. The ionized gases shone with bright colors, celebrating another victory against the Empire and honoring those who had died in the recent battles. For Crix Medine's memorial service, Luke Skywalker waited beside Leia and Han Solo, but his mind was far away. He felt as if he was continually denied a facet of his humanity. Had becoming a Jedi cut him off forever from the normal joys and loves other humans experienced? He hadn't realized the cost would be so high. As Leia stepped to the makeshift podium, the New Republic Honor Guard snapped to attention. Luke glanced at the heavily decorated heroes of the recent Imperial onslaught. His old friend Wedge Antilles stood with new medals pinned to his chest, and beside him the ethereal scientist Kwee-Zoox blinked her indigo eyes, as if once again amazed to be the center of attention. She and Wedge had both been amazed when they had picked up the tiny craft bearing Bevel Lemelisk, the scientist she had worked with to construct the Death Star. Admiral Akbar wore his bright white uniform, riding high as commander of the New Republic fleet. The X-wings overhead finished their run and streaked off to battle stations in orbit, defending the capital world. Leia began to speak. "We are here to celebrate another victory and to acknowledge its cost. Once again, the Empire has attempted to overthrow the rightful government of the galaxy, and once again, they have failed. We will always defeat them, because we have the light on our side. May the Force be with you." Luke returned to Yavin 4. Intending to throw himself entirely into his duties as a Jedi Master. When he clambered out of his X-Wing, he was greeted by Kip Duran.
"Welcome back, Master Skywalker. We knew you'd come soon."
Luke nodded. "I've got to help pick up the pieces here. The search for Jedi Knights continues." In his quarters, Luke found a sealed message cylinder on his sleeping pallet. He took out the cylinder, pulled out the data shaft, and inserted the components together so that they played. The image formed in front of him, and Luke gasped.
"Callista!" He couldn't tell how long ago this had been recorded. She seemed weak and haggard, but with a new kind of inner strength.
"Hello, Luke. The first thing you need to know is that I'm not dead. Sorry if I frightened you. There was no way for me to get back. I barely got away from the Superstar Destroyer in one of the last escape pods before the entire ship crashed into Yavin. Once I escaped, I realized that I could not come back to you, not yet. I'm sorry, Luke. The Jedi powers are closer to me now, but they are not yet within my grasp. The wall of the dark side blocks me from them. I'm afraid I'll be tempted again if I work too closely with you, because when I'm with you, Luke, I want so much to have my powers back that I'm willing to do almost anything. I can't risk that."
"No, Callista," he whispered to her image. "Please.
I have to go on my own odyssey. I'm confident that I can discover my powers. I promise I'll be back, if ever I can prove myself worthy of the great Jedi Master I love."
Her gray eyes were wide and bright and strong.
We will be together in time, Luke. And there is a lot of time in the universe.
Her image winked off. He reached out as if to capture just one more second with her. But she was gone. His heart was in turmoil. Callista was alive. But he had still lost her. For now. Luke stepped outside the great temple in the waning afternoon. The other Jedi Knights worked around him, busy at their activities. He gazed up at the huge orange planet of Yavin and reached across space with his thoughts, telling Callista of his love and of his hope that her search would someday be successful. There is a lot of time in the universe, and we'll be together in time. You and I, Callista, he whispered. The new Jedi Knights continued their work, linked together in the Force, and Luke Skywalker went out to join them.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars: Dark Saber by Kevin J. Anderson. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trevi Johnson. Dark Saber is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1995, all rights reserved. The book Star Wars: Dark Saber is available wherever Bantam books are sold.